The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB. The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good afternoon, folks. Here we are, Sunday. It's September. The NFL is back September 7th, 2014. And the New York Jets were first up in New York, 1 p.m. against the hated Raiders. And then, keeping with tradition here, us salty old Jet fans, yours truly, Derek Wozniak, Chris, for me, John Sweeney, diehard Jet fans, we like to stay positive.
Positive.
The Jets come out today, and in the first half, folks, let's strike up that music if we can, Brian. Because the Jets won today, so we're going to keep it all positive. But early on, they did their best to try and dampen our spirits.
To the same old Jets.
And in the first half, a lot of penalties. Willie Colon, no discipline. Couple of turnovers. Geno Smith threw a pick early. Fumbled away one. And the Raiders... It was the Raiders, one of the worst teams in the last 10 years in the NFL. It was the Raiders that avoided penalties. It was the Raiders that scored a touchdown to take the 7-3 lead. It was the Raiders that didn't turn the ball over. And the Jets were just trying to ruin a nice, sunny, beautiful day in New York. However, the Jets hit halftime. Went to the locker room, and when they came out in the second half, they took control offensively, ran the ball with efficiency. Geno Smith, at least efficient throwing the ball, nice shuffle pass touchdown to Chris Johnson. And then, to put the score the way you wanted it this way, 19-7, it was Chris Ivory going 71 yards. For a big touchdown. And he is the first New York Jet running back in team history to have two runs of 60 yards or more. He did it last year during the season. And today, a 71-yard touchdown. He tried to celebrate a little early. Not too smart. But he got to the end zone. Went over the century mark, 102 yards rushing or something like that. And the Jets' defense, if nothing else, they held the Raiders to 25 yards rushing on 15 carries. And that's the kind of defense I want to see. And just to keep you on your toes a little bit, not let you get a little comfortable, towards the end of the game, you know, the defense softened up a little bit on a few plays. They allowed Carr to move him down the field, threw a touchdown to cut it to 19-14. But Salas put away the onside kick. And today it's all about the... So for all those young radio hosts here at WGBB, Jake Brown and Andrew Joseph and all the guys that think we're a little too cynical, a little too hard on the Jets, we're going to keep it positive today. But we're going to keep it with a little perspective, though, folks. We know we beat one of the worst teams in the AFC and in the NFL. But still, it's a Jet win, and the Jets won an opener day, and they're 1-0, and they're on their way. We don't know where yet.
They win the division.
But the Jets are on their way. Let's get a little music to finish up this segment. John, tell us how you felt during this game.
I felt great. Besides Ivory having that 70-yard touchdown, that was the last time, at least the last Jet before that one was 36 games ago. You know who it was? It was one of our favorites.
What, to score a touchdown from outside the 20 or something like that?
20 yards or more. You know what it was?
The Green Machine?
Sean Green, that's right.
Sean Green?
It's been 36 games since a Jet running back has scored a touchdown 20 yards or more.
And for all our Jet followers out there, that is the new theme song for the Jets on game day wins. Days they win games, we play Jet. by Paul McCartney and the Wings.
We're going to be playing a lot.
When they lose, everybody knows the theme song because of the last couple of years. When they lose, we play Joan Jett and I Hate You. I Hate Myself for Loving You. That's a very appropriate song when they lose. However, today, big win. John, let's
this is one of many.
Just so everyone knows, the number to call 631-888-8811. John Sweeney's there across from me. I'm Derek Wozniak. Tonight, it's a big Jet night. We got a 2-hour show in this first hour. Joining us in just about 5 minutes or so, we have a special guest, one of the all-time great Jet quarterbacks, Ken O'Brien, who guided this team from 1985 to 1991. Those were his prime years. He'll join us for 20 minutes or so, and we'll talk about the Jets a little bit. We'll talk about the mid-'80s Jets, a team that I thought was the best I had seen, especially offensive personnel and with that defensive line with Gaston and Klecko. But we're going to talk about that when Ken O'Brien comes on, and we'll elaborate afterwards if you want to call in and give your comments. But right now we want to talk about the first half and how this game went. And, you texted me during the game. The Jets love to turn the ball over. After the second turnover, first half.
Like
I texted
the same
you back.
Jets. Yes.
Almost as much as they like taking penalties. So I thought that was two of the biggest problems, the penalties and obviously the two turnovers.
Well, it wasn't until the third period when Oakland got their first penalty.
Yeah, they showed discipline.
They didn't have a sack, a penalty, a turnover till the third period.
Right.
Come on. And you're playing Oakland with a rookie quarterback.
Right.
This is like the only rookie starting in the NFL. And players go to Oakland to get money and to end their career.
Pretty much. They went to the Super Bowl in 2002.
That's right.
And they have been one of the biggest jokes in the league ever since. That's amazing. No team has ever done that.
No.
Go to a Super Bowl and then miss the playoffs 12 straight years. And yet they were the disciplined team, not taking penalties, not turning the ball over. And I was a little concerned with the Jets from that perspective. And I looked at the first half. The other thing that annoyed me was they had a chance, and it was our guy, the Hawk.
Yeah.
Right? Had a chance for a pick for a touchdown, and he dropped the ball.
Well, at least a pick.
And I said to myself, you're officially a Jet.
Yeah.
But hopefully he's got hits in the second half. But the first half, that was the only other thing that annoyed me, aside from the penalties and the two turnovers. The Jets came out, moved the ball down real well early on. A couple penalties took them out of it. They had to settle for a field goal. And then a turnover led to a Raider touchdown.
I'm going to say this, though, because I was a big critic of Geno. Right? I kept saying Vic.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we both did.
Geno, besides the pick and the fumble on the run, he didn't look bad. He was 23 out of 28, threw for 221. He kind of settled down.
Yeah, he's pretty efficient.
Yeah. I was kind of happy.
The first half, he was responsible for the two turnovers. That happens.
He got it out of the way. But
he recovered.
Out of the way.
And
luckily they're playing Oakland. They weren't playing a good team.
Yeah, he didn't let it rattle him.
The good news is the Patriots lost as well, so here we go. Like I said, you have to win the division, and there you go. The door's open. Now we got to see. Keep it going. I know Buffalo won and Miami won as well.
It's only 1 week, but they got to win. They got to win against a team they're supposed to beat, an old-time AFL rival, the Oakland Raiders. I hate the Raiders.
So do I.
So in that regard, a good win, but we got to keep in perspective the kind of team we were playing. And defensively, I was very happy, except for the fact that I didn't like them allowing the Raiders to come down the field at the end to cut it to 19-14, giving them a shot at an onside kick. I didn't like that from a defensive standpoint. But other than that, listen, 25 rushing yards on 15 carries, I'll take that any time. Uh-huh. And then the other thing that stood out to me, I thought Antonio Allen had a lot of big defensive plays in the second half, a lot of key tackles where he didn't allow receivers yards after the catch. And DeJuan Landry had a really good game. He had a big sack. The Jets in the first half defensively, I don't know whether it was their scheme or their game plan, what they wanted to do, but to me, they weren't sending enough guys after the rookie quarterback in the first half. Little pressure, if at all.
Which we talked about before. We have to go after the rookie quarterback, teach him a lesson. He's in our stadium. Let's punch him in the face and teach him a lesson. But Landry, that sack was huge.
It was huge. They only had two sacks on the day. But at least in the second half, they were getting hits on the quarterback.
Yeah.
They were getting the quarterback hurries, and he wasn't sitting as comfortable as he might have looked in the first half. When he was fairly efficient for rookie quarterback, his first start, and he starts out 7-for-7 passing. That's pretty good, but I think that was part of the Jets not, getting in his face and, making him sweat a little bit.
Yeah,
right?
Which they should have been doing. I think that's what they adjusted with the scheme going on. And they did, they did what they had to do. And I'm telling you, Geno settled down. I was happy with him.
Right.
I was like, wow, this guy's he's actually looking good. He at one point, I think he connected with 8 passes in a row.
Right.
Or something like that.
Yeah, he was efficient.
Yeah.
And they ran the ball well. 212 yards as a team and 400 yards total offense. I'll take that anytime.
Ivory's lucky because in the about the 30-yard line going in, he's ready to put his hand up.
Celebrating too soon.
Soon. He's lucky he didn't get caught at the end. Yeah. And something would have happened,
No, I agree. You know, that's something that.
Come on, you put your head down. You want to smash. You can't get in the end zone. You want to celebrate? Get in the end zone and celebrate.
Right.
After you're in, do what you
got
to do.
All right. So we got the win, and we're 1-0, and it's 2014. But right now, it is our extreme delight and with pleasure to welcome one of the all-time Jet quarterbacks in team history, the only Jet quarterback to throw more than 100 touchdowns in his career and throw less than 100 interceptions. And that is Ken O'Brien, number 7. Kenny, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Guys, how are you? Have a great night. It's a nice day to start out with a win, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It is. Did you get to watch the game today at all?
I did. It's the best time of year. College football's on yesterday, and the NFL starts today, and the Jets win. So I listen to you guys break it down pretty much, but I'd give them, I'm happy with a win. We can talk about a lot of things, but a win's a big deal, and it's nice to get on with the real thing and start off really well.
And Kenny, listen, give us your impressions of today's game from a quarterback perspective, how Geno ran the game start to finish. Just give us your impressions of him through the first year and now into this year, second year.
Well, I think it was an interesting game for a lot of reasons for me. I've watched Derek Carr for 4 years. My son went to school with him at Fresno, so I've watched him for a while. He's a really physically talented kid, so I was excited to watch him play. But at the same time, I knew that, I think the Jets got back to doing what they do and what they win. They won with Mark Sanchez a few years ago. They played great defense, and that's what, let's face it, that's what Rex does. He can shut you down, and he's got the guys up front doing it. They've got some banged-up guys in the secondary, but he did a great job on defense today and kept them on their toes, and they're good enough. So right now, I guess a team like that, you're good enough, A, to overcome mistakes, which if you're playing a good team, you can't have those mistakes you had later on. But you did it today, and you learned from it. And then the other thing that you realize is that if you – play well, don't turn the ball over, you're in every game, but somewhere down the line there's going to need a time when the offense is going to have to put on their shoulders and you're going to have a two-minute drill, come back late in the game and win in the last drive. So I think it's all stepping stones for us, but it's momentum's a big thing, and if you build momentum, a lot of confidence soars, and I expect them to continue on that path. But I was really, really excited about the way the defense played, and they never gave up. And, the offense made a few mistakes early, but they hung right in there. And then Geno made a lot of plays, made a lot of throws, did a lot of smart things with the ball. And then you have a kid takes off for 70 yards for a touchdown, certainly helpful as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the running game did really good today. They ran for 212 yards today. Did a good job.
And that helps your play action, which is, it's easy. I mean, if you run the ball, your play action is easy because they can't blitz, and you can pick everybody up, and then you got one-on-one down the field, and that your guys, you can take home run shots, and I think that's what you want to build towards.
Yeah, one thing I think about Geno, Ken, tell me if you agree, is that I think if he works, it's only his second year, but if he works and develops that precision passing in terms of accuracy, I think he becomes a more dangerous quarterback because of his elusiveness. Now, you were not a running quarterback. You were sitting in the pocket throwing the ball. So that's one contrast between the two, right? He can scramble, and he creates first downs out of nothing.
Yeah, he ran. He made a couple nice plays with his legs. He made a couple nice first downs. Other than the turnovers, and like I said, we're pulling hairs because I wouldn't be as critical. I'm happy with the good things that came out of it.
Right.
And I think that's a building block. But he had a guy going down the seam, and he overthrew that by a foot. Well,
right.
Who knows if it's a touchdown, but it's a big play. And those are the plays that. I'm sure I know that Geno is sees himself making that, so he just stores it away. And next time he said, okay, what I do, I'm going to make that next time. And when you make those plays, then all of a sudden it's not 200 yards, 300 yards, and a couple more touchdowns.
Right. So now I like the enthusiasm in your voice, Kenny, rooting for the Jets. So
oh, yeah.
I know that you were, let's go back and touch on your career as a quarterback. You were born in New York. You have family here. How long did you live in New York? Give us a little taste of what growing up was like. Go ahead.
I didn't have a chance to live there long. My mom and dad were both born in Brooklyn.
Okay.
My dad finished medical school and got his residency. He was over in Bay Ridge at Kew Gardens, and he decided when he got out he didn't want to raise a big family in Brooklyn. So
right.
I was three. I had a brother, two, and another brother, one. And then the other three were born out in California. So, but all my relatives, you know, most of them in Brooklyn were New York City cops. All my cousins and all my aunts and uncles upstate New York. So everybody except for our immediate family is back east.
Well, that's why I like you even more now. Yeah. We were big fans of yours. You were a big part of my high school and college
mine
days.
Mine too.
John, and me and my partner John, we were both New York Police Department officers.
Yes.
We worked in the NYPD and then
right.
we came out
but
to
I was, but I had the most fun with the PBA. I did a lot of the Police Benevolent Association, so I spent a lot of time with those guys.
Right.
It's like, for me, it was like family with having my uncles and cousins around. It was a great experience and really enjoyed every second with it, and like everything, they don't get enough credit.
All right, so growing up, even though you lived in California, were you a Jet fan or was there another team you followed?
I was a Jet fan. You know, I mean, being from New York, and my mom and dad would take us back there every few years, and my uncles would take us out to you know, they'd have six kids. What do you do with them? And your mom and dad want to go somewhere. So my uncles would take us out to the practice field. So I was out at Hofstra. I met Joe Namath the first time when I was, you know, when your uncles are cops, you have free access everywhere.
Yeah, right.
So I met Joe when I was just a little kid, and he spent some time talking to me. So years later, when we became friends, I like to rib him and tell him that story.
Was he your favorite Jet of all time, or was there another guy you liked even more?
Well, Joe was, you know, I mean, how could you have somebody better than Joe? But after meeting him, he was the guy that I liked. But I like, you know, I mean, Don Maynard and all those guys who were playing then with Emerson Boozer and Matt Snell and all right. the linemen I met later right. on. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. But Joe had something, being a quarterback, you got to stay with another guy.
No, I got you.
But Kenny, I don't want to jump around too much with this, but I want to say I have a man crush on you because when I was younger, my brother was a Dolphin fan, and I was a
My brother.
Isn't that weird? My youngest brother. We're both retired now. My brother's still a fireman. He's a New York City fireman now. But and he was a Marino guy. I was a Kenny O'Brien guy. I wore your jersey every single night. And we would play in the, we play with our friends and everything. I was always Kenny O'Brien. My brother was always Marino on the other end, and I'd be going over there slamming him to the ground. So, this is.
Well, that's great. Next time you see him, put on the jersey and slap him around for me.
I'm going to do that.
So in addition to Joe Namath, Ken, were there any other quarterbacks you looked up to or patented yourself after?
Oh, you know, I mean, I think you just, you know, as a kid, I mean, it was a little bit different world then, but I mean, I had posters on my wall of guys like John Brody and Terry Bradshaw and Roger Staubach.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Burt Jones was a guy that I, you know, which is weird. I mean, why Burt Jones? I don't know why, but I always liked Burt Jones. I thought he was a great, you know, and I was fortunate enough to be able to meet all these guys later in life and became friends with all of them. So it's kind of a neat deal.
That is great. And growing up, aside from football, were there any other sports you played while you were out in California? I mean, perfect weather all the time. What, you were in
when I went back to Brooklyn, we played stoop ball and stick ball.
Right.
We didn't get much of that in California,
no.
So that's my career.
All right.
Back
so you didn't play high school
and
baseball?
Out there and everything else. Played basketball and baseball. And see, everyone switched around. Nowadays, kids are just playing one sport, which I think is a little detrimental.
Right.
But in those days, when the seasons changed, you changed with them.
I got you. Were you a star? Did you start any other sports like basketball or baseball, or was it just football mainly?
In my mind, all of them, but
yeah,
in reality, that's why I stay with football.
We're all the same way. Okay, so now you went through your school days and high school. When you went to college, everybody knows you went to University of Cal Davis, but originally you were at Sacramento State. So originally you were recruited for a Division I school?
Well, at that time they weren't Division I either. I had
okay.
a couple Division I opportunities, and I'd really only played, you know, and where I was, they didn't really throw the ball a lot. It was an option team until my senior year in high school, so that's the first time I actually threw it.
Okay.
And so I got recruited a little bit late, and I was real tall and real skinny, kind of a late bloomer. So I wanted to go to Davis and had a little mix-up with the coaching staff there. So I went to Sac State because they played against them. And then when I was there for a year, I realized that they weren't going to be able to throw the ball much. So I went out to Davis, redshirted, and was there for 4 years.
And
it was great. Davis, for me, I had a great coach in Jim Soaker, who's in the Hall of Fame.
Right, tell us about him. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was, you know, he had a lot of success in football. He was real innovative in offense, but in those days I could meet with him every day. So I used to go in at 6 in the morning and all off season, and we'd sit there and watch film and meet and have breakfast, and you know, became a friend. But he had me so prepared for every game, and he used to let me lead team meetings when I was a junior. So he matured me beyond my years.
All right, and then in those years at Cal Davis, you put up some lofty numbers, enough that in 1997 they did induct you into the College Football Hall of Fame, correct?
They did, yeah. You did some good research. You must have read the fine print there. But, yeah, I was lucky enough to go back for that and be included in that. And, you know, that's one of those, anything like that in any team sport, it's a team deal. So,
right.
You know, at a quarterback, you get stuck up. But I think if I didn't say anything, then like your brother, all my old teammates would line up and knock me out if they had a chance. They said I did it all on my own.
Right, so you're able to accomplish a lot at Division II. Now, leading up to the 83 draft, were there numerous teams talking to you, like in private, or just where no one would really? It's not like today where ESPN covers everything. Was anybody talking to you?
It was a totally different world in that regard, but, you know, with the internet and everything else. But they were out there looking all the time, and they were always sending people out there to go watch you throw. And, you know, the big question mark is you have all these other guys. I would see John because he was local, and I'd thrown with him a little bit, but, you know, I knew that after throwing with him that, you know, I mean, that was not an issue. So it was just a matter of meeting with them and, you know, showing them what you know mentally and getting them to like you and going over film with them. And, you know, like I said, Coach Soaker helped prepare me so much that anything they asked, I had a pretty good handle on.
That 83 class was the greatest class of quarterbacking of all time.
A lot of good friends in that class now, and more than anything, we've been talking since Jim hasn't been feeling well, got good word on him last week, and sent him a text every once in a while, but as tough as he is, he'll be around a lot longer than all of us.
Right, yeah, which is good, with good news that everything's coming back clean with him. I'm assuming you still stay, I guess you stay in touch with all these guys and everything all the time.
Yeah, well, you know, now with
Kelly.
Yeah, now you got to learn how to text and every now, you know, nobody picks up the phone anymore and calls. So it's a text here, an email there, something like that in passing. But it's sure nice to be able to stay in touch. It's a lot more convenient nowadays to stay in touch than it was, you know, years ago.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. So when you were drafted by the Jets, was your dad excited? Were you excited about coming to New York?
Oh, yeah, I was ecstatic about it. It was, you know, I mean, I didn't even dream it was going to happen. They'd kind of kept a lower profile, and of all teams, we're speaking of them today. The Raiders were the ones that were trying to get me to go there. From what we had heard,
oh my God! Thank God.
You know, it went right before them. So it was a great experience. I met a lot of really good friends and great people back there, and you know, it was great to see family. But it was really great to play football in New York. And like everybody, you're trying to win a Super Bowl all the time, and that's the goal. But at the end of the day, you got to suffice to say that, you know, if you gave 100% all the time, then you did everything you could, and happy with it, and keep rooting them on now.
Right now, I'm sure you're well aware, because you were involved in it. They did the 30 for 30 special on ESPN about the 83 draft. You have six Hall of Famers drafted in that class, a lot of great quarterbacks. Were you approving of the way they portrayed you in the documentary?
You know what? They did do it. I never saw it.
Really? You didn't see it?
Yeah, I didn't see it. But
all right,
I don't know. I don't know how they portrayed it, but. You know, I mean, make it whatever. I've never really been one to worry too much about something like that.
You know, I thought it was fair. I thought Lee Steinberg spoke very well of you. He was your agent, I assume?
Lee was my agent. Yeah, sorry about that. Lee was my agent years ago, yeah.
Right, he spoke highly of you. And listen, they talked about, obviously, the Hall of Famers with Jim Kelly and John Elway.
Yeah.
And Dan Marino, and, you know, I thought it was fair because they separated you from Blackledge and Easton, and that, you know, like Steinberg said, you know, all right, he wasn't a Hall of Famer, but the guy had a really good career, which is true. A lot of people don't know, you know, how well you did for yourself. I look at it this way, Ken. If you played in today's NFL, when you played in the NFL, a 58 career completion percentage, that was highly
– Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was highly accomplished in terms of accuracy back then. You were a very accurate quarterback. You threw the deep ball. You have a lot of, like, distinct jet records, like the longest touchdown in team history, a 96-yarder to Wesley Walker.
Yep.
You're the only quarterback that threw for 3,500 yards or more and 25 touchdowns or more in multiple seasons,
yeah,
no less, 2 years in a row.
Yes.
So when you came to the Jets in 83, you didn't play your rookie year, and you started a handful of games in your second year. So now that's unlike today's Geno Smith, who started right away from day one. But why don't you tell us about those first couple of years before you really took over? What was it like when you first got here?
Well, you know, I mean, I think everything other than Dan Marino started as a rookie down there in Miami.
Right.
And, you know, and I give credit to Shula for saying, hey, you know what, I got a guy – who can throw it, and I got some receivers who can run it. you know, he changed what he did completely. And that was a great move by Shula. But other than that, the game was just starting to change. It hadn't really opened up like that. And we had a really good team at the time coming in. They had just played Oakland in the AFC Championship game the year I came in.
Right.
Yeah. And Richard had played, you know, had played well. I guess had a they had a blip going in against Miami, I guess, that year or something like that. But they beat Oakland, lost to Miami, I guess how it was. But great guy. He was a great guy. I was really fortunate. I had Richard. I had Pat Ryan. And I had a group of veterans who, after they got done giving me a hard time for the first few months, became really good friends with and went out of their way to help me. And there was never anybody, you know, all a good group of guys, good friends, no backstabbing. And it was a great learning experience for a young guy. And as long as I keep my mouth shut and follow them, it was pretty good.
Right, yeah, Richard Todd had two good years. 1981 had a pretty decent year for himself. And then obviously 82 you're talking about was a strike year, so they had a Super Bowl tournament. So they had beaten the Bengals in the first round of that. And then they beat the Raiders, one of the greatest team victories in playoff history.
That was a great game.
That was actually Oakland's first year in L.A., and they were supposed to win easily.
Right.
That was devastating for them. I think they actually went and won the Super Bowl the next year. But the Jets upset them. It was a great win. And then the old Mud Bowl where they say Shula, you know, it was pouring the night before. He let the turf get wet because back then, Free McNeil was a big-time running back. He came out of the draft in 81. And in 82, in a short season, he still led the NFL in rushing. He was the marquee player for the Jets offensively at the time. So
yeah, Freeman's a stud. I wouldn't put it by Shula for doing it. And good for him if he got away with it because it was a dry field. I don't think they'd have been able to stop Freeman.
Yeah, and since I brought up his name, what was it like? Tell us you know, any experiences you had with Freeman as a player, teammate?
Well, yeah, Freeman's a great guy and a friend. I mean, he and I lived together after my first year, the whole off season of the year. So we were really, really good friends. And I mean, I grew up, I watched Freeman at UCLA, and as dominant as he was out here on the West Coast, shoot, everybody knows him. So it was a pleasure to play. He was one of those selfless guys that would do absolutely anything that he had to do to make the team better. And I think I don't think we gave him enough credit when he was there. He was that good of a running back. We should have fed him the ball more. And, you know, if I have anything to say about it, I wish I was a little bit more. I always did well in 2 minutes, and I wish I was a little bit more. You get older, you get more crotchety. And if you're more crotchety and take advantage of it and throw the ball all over the lot of the back, because we have some pretty good receivers.
Right.
If we'd opened up, it would then, you know, get the ball to your best guys all the time. And that's something that I learned, especially playing and after I'm done. Put it in their hands, let them do everything with it. So,
right. Well, you took
that's like today. That's like today's game.
Yeah.
That's all Gino has to do. Get it to the right guys and go with it. So.
Well, now he's got Decker over there now. He's got, you know.
Yeah. Well, you took over in 1985, Ken, and you tell me if you disagree, you agree. You followed the Jets when you were young. You're following them now in retirement. The mid-'80s, the 85-86 team, that team had three-quarters of the sack exchange with Klecko, Gaston, Omari Lyons. I thought personally, growing up watching the Jets, I thought from an offensive standpoint, from a talent standpoint, that was the best Jet team I had seen because you had Wesley Walker and Al Toon. You had Mickey Shuler at tight end. You're throwing the ball around, and not only do you have Free McNeil, but you got Johnny Hecht. And I don't think it's by any coincidence that 85 and 86, you put up monster numbers. So did you view that at the time that, you know, here you're functioning this offense with all those weapons? Do you think that was the best offensive Jet team that probably was around?
Yeah, I agree. We had a lot of tools and a lot of guys that and got some awards. I think that, you know, we had some funky injuries at wild times that, especially on defense, they ended up hurting us toward the end and just made it a little bit tougher. I don't know if we were mature enough to be able to overcome that. I think we were talented enough.
Right.
But it's a learning, you know, it's a learning curve. And then, you know, then we started having guys on offense get banged up a little bit after that. But, yeah, I couldn't ask for having two better guys than Alan and Wesley out there. And they're good friends as well. So it's fun to keep in contact with them occasionally.
No, and that's great. So in 85, I want to touch on a game because I know my partner is going to ask you about 1986. Everyone knows about the Marino-O'Brien rivalry. But in 1985, when I was growing up, my mom worked for Jerry Philbin. He was the defensive end when they won the Super Bowl. So Jerry Philbin would give us like three or four games a year for me and my dad to go to big Jet, you know, like father like son, go to Jet games, get in there early. We'd watch warm-ups. We didn't care about tailgating. So that year, you know, I went to the home opener. You guys blew out Buffalo like 42-3. But my most memorable game watching you and that entire allotment of offensive skill was actually And the reason I remember this game so much is because it was like the only time that I was ever late to a game, because it wasn't just me and my dad. We had to go with my cousin, so we were late. So we get to the stadium. It's like 5 minutes into the game, and you're playing the Buccaneers. And I walk in, we're walking down to the seats, and I'm looking at the scoreboard. I can't believe the Buccaneers are winning 14-0. I know there's no way that you don't remember this game. By the end of the game, you had thrown 5 touchdown passes, and the Jets put up the most points in a game in team history, 62-28. I would have never thought that when I walked in. When I left, it wound up being the greatest game I was at in person involving that crew of offensive skill. Tell us about that game if you remember it.
Heck, we were just waiting for you to get there. You should have done that every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have the ability, when you get behind, you have to throw. We were pretty good at that, and it kind of just let all the other stuff out of the way about being balanced. So that's one of the times, like in two-minute drills, when you had to throw. We were always pretty successful in two-minute drills. We got, we needed to do something. And like I said, I mean, you live and learn. As I look back on it now, it's a lot clearer to me than it was then. But all the coaching I've done, it's really helped me with young kids. I work with a lot of young kids when they call and they want to go out and do stuff, and guys are even playing now. And
right. It's
just fun to go around and try to put a little information in their head. And, it's all about confidence, and that's all it is. And I think that's what a coach has to do. If Rex gives Geno confidence, he's going to grow and he's going to do what he wants him to do. And I think they're going to get back on the stick this year and be where they want to be at the end of the year, because I think they've learned that lesson. I think they're going in the right direction, right. Obviously.
Now, a couple of years ago, I interviewed Wesley Walker. And when we talked about quarterbacks he played with, his voice lit up with joy when I brought up Ken O'Brien. So can you talk about Wesley Walker a little bit and throwing the ball to him? Because we know he was legally blind in one eye. I mean, the guy was a tremendous burner, most receiving touchdowns of any Jet receiver since the NFL merger. At least he had 71 catches. Tell us about a little bit.
Think about that. Think about that for a second, though. A ball's coming over your head 67 yards down the field, and you're blind in one eye, and you got to pick it up and look over. It's an amazing feat.
Right.
I mean, I have a tough time catching a ball like that with two good eyes.
Right,
and,
exactly.
Wesley was an absolute. He's a great friend of mine. He's a great, great football player. He had exceptional. I'll tell you two stories with speed and. His strength was he could do it. He never really lifted. I mean, he would lift because he had to, but there wasn't anything he couldn't do. He, put 350 on the bench.
And
he was only 180 pounds. I mean, he was just a physical freak. But the running one that I had was another good receiver I had when I was first there was Johnny Lamb Jones. And Johnny,
you
guys know, had a gold medal in the Olympics.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Wesley was a track guy. So I used to make these guys run with me in the off season at the track. And that was probably worth the admission. Because we'd run these quarters or 220s, and you'd have to just stay. Whoever was in the charge, we'd rotate. They couldn't pass him. So the first one, Wesley takes off, and he and Lamb, literally, they finish 100 yards in front of me.
Right.
And I'm yelling at him. The second one, Lamb leads, and Wesley, he can't lose Wesley. Now, he's won the gold medal, and he cannot lose. Wesley's right in his hip pocket the whole way.
Wow.
But they can only run two or three of them. Now, after about the sixth or seventh one, they're 100 yards behind me because they're all cramped up, and I'm laughing at them.
That's great.
So they finally just said, you know what? Forget you. We don't need to do this. We're still fast. We don't need to be doing this all day like your fat rear end. So
we didn't do
a whole lot of duration work. It was mostly no endurance, just sprint work with those guys. But great, great guys. And Wesley, unfortunately, had that nerve problem where he got hit. And it got progressively worse on him, and then one side of his body, I'm thinking now, I think it was his right side of his body that, the nerve went, would really go dead on him. And he played for a couple of years like that. And it was just unfortunate that he wasn't 100% healthy because he was as good as anybody in the league and nobody. He's the kind of guy that if you put the ball in the air, he had another gear all the time to be able to go get it. Like nobody else's business. And nobody wanted to cover Wesley one-on-one because they knew that they go right by him. He put the fear of God in everybody.
I agree with you 100% with that. I wanted to ask you a question about, because I know you had, was Miami one of the teams that you had to get up on? Because from 85 and 86, those four games, you threw for 1,378 yards, 8 TDs, against Marino. I mean, was that one, were you looking forward to playing Miami? Is that what it was?
Well, I think it's easy to, I look forward to just playing. It was always fun to play, but I think that what would normally happen would be Coach Walton would, and then later Bruce would think that, hey, they're going to put some points up, so we got to score. We got to go out and do it. And a lot of times they would put points up. You'd be behind and you have to throw a lot more. And, I don't think we gave ourselves enough credit for what we could do. We were balanced. Everybody wanted to be balanced in those days. And, I think those, some of those games forced us to be a little heavy pass to try to make things happen than it was, in a balanced offense. And, you know, like I said, if you get the ball to the right guys, heck, I know Weston made 50 great catches for me and Al made 50 great catches for me. So, if you put it up close, let them go do their thing, they make you look good.
Now, in the playoffs, I mean, I thought that 85 team was the best team I had seen. 11-5. The only bad loss you really had that year was Thanksgiving against Detroit in terms of, you know, most of the other teams you lost to that year were like 12-4 teams. They were good teams, Miami, Oakland, you name it. In the playoffs, I thought you were going to beat New England. Did you get hurt at the end of the first half there against New England in the playoffs?
I think that was the year I got a little bit of a concussion, I think. They kept me out for a while. I don't know if they kept me out, you know, I don't even remember, but I had a concussion one year. I missed a little bit of time. But I think that might have been the year they went to the Super Bowl, too.
It was. Eason had a good playoff run, and they got to the Super Bowl. But I thought your team was better. Your first half was decent. It was within, you know, there were a couple turnovers in the first half, but you threw the ball well, and the game was there. But I if I remember correctly, because I actually wrestled in high school, so I didn't get to see the game live. Right. I was at a tournament. But I think when I came home and watched the game, I think it was Andre Tippett that had tagged you pretty good at the end of the first half. Do you remember that or no? You just erased that from memory.
Yeah, no, you know what, I remember now that you're, I wouldn't have remembered it if you didn't bring it up, but I do remember getting banged in the head and then trying to go back in and out. But today's protocol for concussions is a lot different than it was in those days.
Right.
So I probably had a permanent concussion, guys, and they just, you know, I wouldn't have passed any of the tests. They're doing it now.
Right. But, hey, Kenny, I'm not trying to ruin your day. I'm just, you know, I think you should have better success in the playoffs, you know, because you were a favorite quarterback of mine. Actually, the big-time quarterback for the Jets is your regular season success. And maybe Mark Sanchez actually has had excellent postseason success and, you know, just didn't make the progress that you would have hoped in the regular season, building off of confidence. But I just remember that year, and you go into 1986, you guys were 22-6 at one point. I mean, you had a very good defense. You had Bud Carson running that defense, if I remember correctly, and a great allotment of players on offense. Coming off of the 85 and then the 86 season, you know, with the way you lost in double overtime to Cleveland, what do you think was the biggest thing missing from the team going forward, like not further developing into a title winner?
You know, I don't know. I think that as I look back on it and say, you know, there's always, I think injuries are a factor, but I think something that happened there is some of the dynamics changed when the strike came out.
Right.
And we had some guys that crossed the line. And I'm not, it's neither here nor everyone does what they had to do.
Right, but I got you.
The way that it was handled, I think we went into that strike year 3-0. We played the last game against Seattle on Monday Night TV and beat them.
Right.
And then we had some issues amongst ourselves as a team when they let guys come in during the strike and cross the picket line. And it was never the same. For me, it was, you know, I mean, I kind of understood where everyone was coming from, but for a lot of guys in the team, it was a sense of trust was lost, and it took a long time for that. Man, maybe the last year or two I was with the Jets, it started coming back because, you know, some of the older guys had left and the younger guys had left at that time. But
right.
That strike year put a lot of pressure on that. You know, being a young guy, I didn't see it, but as I sat back and looked at it, you know, at the end of the year and after the year, it certainly did. And I just think the way it was handled, from top to bottom, let's just leave it at that. Didn't work in our best interest for the team. We just caused a lot of issues, and we never really got back to the right deal on it.
Right, because you had you started out 2-0 that year. I was in college up at Buffalo, and I went to that opening day. You guys beat the Bills, and I remember you guys looked like it was going to be another strong season. And then even 1988, man, I remember going to that home opening. You beat the Oilers like 45-3. And, you know, 8-7-1 in a season where you probably should have been 10-6. So I understand where you're coming from with that. But the last big hurrah before your full-time status as quarterback was over with was that big, you know, unofficial playoff game against Miami in 1991. We had Raul Legre on a couple of months ago. We talked about kicking you guys, you know, into overtime and then through overtime into the playoffs against the Oilers. What was that game like? Because I tell you, you had no timeouts when you got the ball back after Marino took the lead in that game at the end of the regular season in 91. And for you to just get in the field goal range between you and Johnny Hecht, to talk about that game, was that one of the more exciting games you were a part of?
Yeah, you know, it was. It was, well, I mean, like you said, it was, even though it was the last game of the year, because we lost the game prior to it to the Colts that we should have won. And so, you know, everybody was down their luck. You know, what's going on? We had a chance. We blew it. And we were all out in the city having dinner, and all of a sudden the game came back that, they lost, we're still in it. So we win, we're in against Miami. and it was a big deal. And they came back and had a chance, and we scored a, you know, we went down to get the field goal. I think it was Al. No, it wasn't Al. I'll tell you who it was. It was Rob.
Rob Moore made a nice catch.
Caught a big corner pack. He ran a nice corner pattern. They were in cover two. He made a great catch,
right,
which was great for his. You know, that was great for Rob because he had to fill in for Wesley and Al, who had, that's big shoes. So yeah, it was a great play by him. And then we kicked it. We won it. Everybody was really fired up. And I think we went to Miami, not Miami, Houston or somewhere the next week, and had a couple chances and didn't win there. So, but it was a great learning experience for everybody. I think the young guys there who hadn't been around realized that you could be pretty good at that point in time. And the team was good. The team was good then. And we missed a few things. We didn't take advantage of that opportunity we should have with the Oilers. But
right,
I think we could have got better. It's just, and the next year, you know, they went a different direction. Browning played off and on during the year, and it was just the chemistry got dusted at that time.
You know what, Kenny, and I'm not trying to make you feel bad because you're one of my favorites, but it was probably the only time I got mad at you was the playoff game against the Oilers. That was a bit silly because now I was in college. Like, thought I knew everything, but I got mad because you guys had the ball down by the goal line so many times, and each guy just took a turn, you know, just mistakes.
Well, I don't,
because we only lost the game 17-10, and we were sitting there, me and my dad, like, we should be winning this game. Yeah. These guys are moving the ball. They're right in that spot. So I apologize. It's probably the one day where I was really mad at you.
I don't blame you at all, and you're right on all regards. We should have won that game.
Now, the last player I want to ask you about, because he got, we spoke about concussions a little earlier, but Al Toon, he got a concussion, a bad one, early in his career against Pittsburgh. I think it was Greg Lloyd that laid into him. But here's a guy who still had over 500 catches, and his career was over at the age of 29. I personally think he's, put your old name at the side. I didn't start watching Jet football till the mid 70s. He's one of the best football players I think I've seen, and he was neck and neck in terms of receptions, yards, that kind of stuff, with Jerry Rice until he had gotten that concussion. Look what Jerry Rice did in his career. And I'm not saying that Al would have done that, but Al Toon was one of the best possession receivers with a ability to burn you deep too. Can you tell us any good stories about Al Toon?
Al's one of my dear friends, and I agree with everything you say. He was a phenomenal receiver. He was one of those guys, extremely bright, and he knew as much. He was like a quarterback on the field. He knew why we were doing things, when we were going to go to certain situations, what I was thinking. We could kind of look at each other and make things up at the time what we wanted to do. And we just kind of had this little feel for it. But I'll give you I don't know if you remember, the greatest catch in a game Al made was, we were up at the King, I think it was the Kingdome. Whatever they call the one in Seattle.
The Seattle Kingdome. You threw for a lot of yards.
One ball right before the half. I said, let's see what happens. So we're going to throw it up to Al in the huddle. We throw it up. And he bounces the ball, and he didn't catch it clean like he normally does. And the guy hit him, and then he reaches down and catches it between his legs as he's lying on his back. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable catch for a touchdown. You know, Al gets up like it's nothing. Like, okay, you know, Bob, he never wanted to make it look like football was hard to him, and it wasn't. It was easy to him. It wasn't his whole life. So he just, you know, he could section it off, do everything he had to do, prepare for it, play it, and then he'd go out and have five or six other things going on. He's a real amazing, really a gifted guy. He's doing really well. His family's doing great, and it's always fun to talk to him. I'm glad that over the years his head's been okay and hasn't given him any of the problems. So that's you know, his health is good, and that's the main thing. But as far as the football player, he did some things on the field that made it easy, really easy for you. And he was just so physically gifted. I mean, he could have gone to the Olympics as a triple jumper if he wanted, and that was what he was going to do, until the Jets kind of, you know, came into play and held him back.
Well, he was one of those players that wasn't afraid to go over the middle either. He'd go over the middle and take a hit. That's, you know.
He made all the catches,
Ken.
Every catch. Ken, the two best football players I've seen in a Jet uniform, I'm not saying NFL history, but in a Jet uniform, talent-wise for their position, were Mark Gastineau and Al Toon. And now I'm going to put you on the spot. Who was a better football player? Being around them every day, and I know you played offense with Al, and
yeah,
Gastineau was a defender, but who was a better, like, who do you think was more impressive?
Between those two guys?
Yeah.
Oh, Al was much better. Al was better at football. Al was an all-around football player. He could do everything. You know, he could have played safety if you wanted him to.
Right.
I mean, he didn't take a play off, and Al was as good as there was, you know, in that comparison. Mark was a great pass rusher, and he could rush the passer. And when he was healthy, he got banged up the last few years with his knees, and that was a tough one. But, yeah, as far as just a football player, when Al was healthy, forget about it.
Yeah, you know what, and I'm not trying to slam J.J. Watt, he got a great contract, defensive end for the Texans. But I tell everybody, J.J. Watt is Mark Gastineau in present day. He is lightning quick. He gets to the quarterback, and he can knock down passes left and right. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, and, you know, it helped Mark having 73 on the other side.
Oh, yeah, no, Klecko was a monster.
You know, to me, Klecko was the, you know, the best defensive guy, football player we had. He did everything.
And, all right.
They wouldn't leave. You would not leave Joe around. I remember a story with Klecko. Just a quick one, I won't bore you, and I'll let you go. But
go ahead.
We were at a Pro Bowl, and Donaldson, wasn't it? The kid from the guy from the center from the Dolphins.
Oh, Stevenson. Dwight Stevenson.
From Dwight Stevenson from Alabama. He came up to me and found me and said, hey, listen, I haven't met Klecko yet, but I just want to know, is he the strongest guy you know? And I started laughing. Dwight, I know what you're talking about. I remember what he did. He said he would pick me up. He would put his hands underneath my pads and pick me up off the ground like I was a little kid and throw me in the ball carrier to make the tackle. He said, I've never been manhandled like that in my life. I said, that's my story. I'm a rookie, and he's doing it to me every day in practice in the locker room. So he just started laughing. But Joe had the respect of everybody in the league. Whenever you talk to somebody, they just said that Klecko's a man, and which is high regarded by everybody.
You know, and they put a lot of emphasis on winning titles. But if the Jets did win the title, especially in the early 80s before you got there, you know, Gastineau and Klecko would have made the Hall of Fame. And probably Wesley Walker. He was very comparable to Swan and Stallworth in terms of his offensive performance.
Sure.
So you're probably right about that. I'm a big Gastineau guy, but I agree with you with Klecko. He was a monster, and he was so powerful.
Yeah.
All right, Kenny, listen.
I just want to say,
thanks, guys. I look forward to
hold on one second.
I just want to say one thing, Kenny. Look, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much. You made two of Jet fans very happy, and a lot of fans that are listening very happy. And if the Jets will get a little sense, they should retire your number. Because it definitely 100% deserves to.
Well,
you're in my Hall of Fame.
Back and watching the game, so we'll keep winning, and hopefully they'll have me back there. We'll catch a game. We'll be back on the radio with you guys.
Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on, and thank you very much. Have a good rest of the night,
John. Derek, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Okay,
there
you
go, folks. Ken O'Brien, second all-time leading passer in Jet history, with some good stories about Al Toon, Joe Klecko, picking up Dwight Stevenson is a Hall of Fame center. He was the ultimate protector. That's why Dan Marino started buying isotoners for everybody.
Picked him up
and threw him into running backs. That is incredible. Are we going to a break here? Do you know we got a cricket in the studio? Is that coming over the airwaves? Because that's great. I want to use that for any callers, or if nobody calls.
I just made my day today.
Oh,
this is like...
We'll talk about it more. We're going to go to a quick break right now. But 631-888-8811. The winning song's up there. We'll turn it up. We're going to go to break. And we'll be right back.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, ride share, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back. Sweeney and the Waz here. Jets 1-0 out there. You fans out there want to call and talk about your team or any other NFL game?
Here we go. 631-888-8811. So Denver's up 3-0 over Indianapolis. That's a good. It's going to be a good game today.
First quarter, 5 minutes to go.
I just want to say that was a pure joy talking to Kenny O'Brien. Because
gentlemen.
I grew up and I had a man crush, as you would say.
I don't know if I would use a man crush.
I do.
I'll give you credit for coming out like that.
I did.
Look, leave it at that. I don't
know what. My brother was a Dolphin. My brother was a big
man crush.
My brother was a big Marino
guy.
Just
say you were my guy.
He was my guy.
Couldn't you have said you were my guy? I was a big O'Brien. Did you ever say man crush?
That's like, I'm gonna go with the man
crush. Like we're back in eighth grade and you're on the phone with.
I guess you're right. But you know what though? I had a lot of fond memories.
I'll let it slide though. I'll let you go.
I had a lot of fond memories of him and the Jets. And
he was great. Listen, we went for 30 minutes. He had to get off. I know he had to get off.
Yeah.
But he was nice enough to stay a little extra. You know, we
talked about some moments. New York.
I love the stories he tells. The one about Lam Jones and Wesley Walker doing the sprints. That where are you getting that story? You ain't getting that anywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of Jet fans don't like Lam Jones. I mean, he just had trouble. You know, he wasn't the he wasn't the reception artist that a Walker was or
anything.
But he did have the speed.
I
coming
mean, Tune
out
was incredible, man. Tune went over the middle. Nobody went over the middle.
I knew I was right about Tune.
Yeah.
He is the best football player they had.
Yeah.
He was great.
He's fantastic.
And even though I disagree, I was a big Gastineau guy.
I agree.
And I swear by his abilities. I understand where he's coming from with Joe Klecko. People were probably more fearful of him. They're probably more fearful of his power than Gastineau's speed. You know?
Well, Gastineau, in my opinion, and yours too as well, is still the sack leader. You know, what Strahan did was whatever. But also, Gastineau quit. He left the NFL.
He retired at a very young age when he had some problems going on there psychologically, drugs, steroids, who knows.
Bridget Nielsen.
This is what goes on.
He left for her.
But like we talked about off air, at least he's remorseful in his retirement. He's not shoving his face.
No.
You know, in the public eye on reality TV shows or anything like that. I mean, the guy, at least he's, you know, gone away. And whenever he does speak, he's humble now at least. I've even heard him say how when he talks to kids, he encourages them not to be the way he was as a young guy. So you don't get that too much from a lot of athletes that have retired, you might get more of what Canseco's been doing since he retired from baseball, right? Which I always paralleled them. I always thought that Gastineau and Canseco were very similar for their sports. You know, Jose Canseco and Mark Gastineau, they had the hair. They had all the women, right? They had that thick hair. The women, some commercials. They had a five-year period of total dominance, each of them, where they were the man.
Bash Brothers for him
because
and
of the way they were jealous or hated them, whatever it was.
You know, Canseco's a big guy. I met him.
He's
a big guy. But he's also, you know, he was also a steroid abuser.
Yep.
And, he'll, you know, that's his...
Now, what do you think about that?
Mark on his name.
Now, I know it wasn't steroids, but I always, when I have the conversation with my dad or anybody else, Wes Welker gets in trouble, right? Gets a four-game suspension.
I know
amphetamines or whatever.
If this might get reversed.
All right, so it gets reversed, whatever. The point
even
is,
even for Josh Gordon,
they're paying attention to it because it's him. But you know as well as I do that when somebody gets suspended, a linebacker, a lineman, this guy, that guy, for PEDs in football, nobody is offended. You know? Nobody's, like if Patrick Willis ever gets caught doing HGH, which they don't even test for yet, right?
Right.
You know, if Ray Lewis had gotten caught, I mean, Ray Lewis got in trouble for being a criminal, but if he got caught doing HGH, they'd probably look at that as no problem either. And in football, those guys would still go into the Hall of Fame. So why is it such a big felony crime in baseball, but not in football from the way fans look at it? Do you think it's because of the violence of the games?
Yeah, that's why. Well, look at these guys.
Because nobody vilifies football players and says, oh, he's never going to make the Hall of Fame now.
Football players get locked up more than anybody else.
Forget about getting locked up.
I'm
talking about performance-enhancing drugs, right? PEDs. When a football player gets caught and gets 4 games, 8 games, nobody says, oh, this guy's a piece of garbage, get him out of here.
No.
He'll never, or Hall of Fame player, he'll never make it, whatever. And a lot of these guys don't get caught because they don't have the testing really in place yet for HGH. But in baseball, as soon as a guy... strongly implicated, tested, admits, whatever. That's it.
Well, baseball's been around for, you know, how long?
I understand.
Years.
But you got to be fair, you know? Sport.
I agree.
Sport.
But now,
is sport.
Now Wes Welker.
Whether you're playing professional baseball or football or hockey or whatever.
Well, Welker got busted for something else.
Amphetamines, I thought it was.
Well, what the hell?
All right, so it's on the list. For the testing they do, it's an illegal substance.
Maybe he was
on
taking pain pills or something because he had a concussion.
Every player says, oh, I didn't know what I was doing. How many times you see a football player or a baseball, oh, I apologize.
I should have looked into it.
In football especially, how many times you see these guys on different teams? Because, you know, I'm waiting for like a quarterback to get in trouble. Or a big-time running back again. But how many times do you hear a guy come out and he goes, oh, I should have gave the label to the trainer. I should have looked into it before I bought it. I mean, they always got an excuse. Everybody wants to plead ignorance, right?
Yeah.
All right. Do you buy that? Do you not know what you're taking?
It just seems like, I mean, it's football and baseball. Basketball players, I don't even think they test them for drugs. These guys, they get away with murder, these guys. But football players just get busted more often. They're taking stuff. They have to compete. They have to be physically
fit. Wait till they have like the HGH testing in place and all that.
There's going to be a lot of guys getting suspended. That's why I think they're going to make this test a little leaner. They say Josh Gordon might come back.
Whatever. He got in trouble for smoking marijuana.
This is like not the first time.
He's gotten locked up. He's gotten in trouble several times.
You know what he's doing right now? He's selling cars in Ohio.
He's a car salesman.
Right in Ohio.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?
You got to do something with your time, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying the guy was a millionaire. Football player. He was a top receiver last year for yardage and whatever.
Was that part of his plea deal with the judge?
I'm going to be a car salesman.
Okay, listen.
Are we going to go sell cars?
You're guilty, but instead of putting you in jail, I got a business. I own a car dealership. You're going to sell cars for me for a year.
Yeah, we're
going
to do all the promos too.
Okay, Judge.
Josh Gordon, the pot smoker.
Selling cars.
Really? Let's just get back to this Jet game.
You want to get back to the Jet game?
A couple minutes, and then we'll go around the league, okay? The Jets, now look. The defense played great. Total yards.
Well, who else do you want to put up there? Like, player of the day. Who do you want to give the player of the day on defense? You want to give it to Antonio Allen, or you want to give it to DeJuan Landry?
Landry for the sack. That was huge.
Just the sack? I mean, he had a couple of nice hits,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, sure he did.
Three tackles, didn't he?
Yeah.
All right. So you think Landry had the bigger defensive day? Five solo tackles, two assists. He had a sack. All right.
And he had that.
I don't have a problem with that, but Antonio Allen, he stood out in the second half. Preventing yards after the catch. Five tackles, and he also had a pass defense in there.
Yeah, that was nice.
All right. Who were you disappointed
with? The Hawk looked good, too, for his first game. The Hawk looked good.
I got to downgrade him at least a full grade for dropping that pick.
Hold on.
You got to be a playmaker.
If you don't know who the Hawk is, listen to our show. The Hawk is our rookie, our star, Calvin Pryor.
That's right. Two tackles.
That's right.
And he had one right in the breadbasket. Two passes defense.
I'm not saying
they gave
him
credit for a pass defense, the one that hit him in the chest and dropped to the ground.
I'm not going
to
say it would have been a touchdown, but
yes,
it would have been a pick.
That would have been it. That would have been a touchdown going the other way. Come on, man. Nothing but open space.
First game, I give him an A.
Did you hear Phil Simms when Geno fumbled?
Yeah.
He had fumbled it one time and got the ball back.
Yes.
And Phil Simms goes, oh, we got the ball back. Like, what, we?
Yeah, we.
I guess it's great being a former athlete. First of all, it's a national broadcast. You never played for the Jets.
The Giants.
I don't care if your son's on the Patrick's practice squad or if he was a backup last year.
Well, he's happy now.
When he said, even Nance seemed like he was rooting for the Jets a little bit.
Did you get that? Yes, I did. Do you remember it? They're doing the broadcast for the Jets, of course.
I'm not happy with your reaction
to my
question.
You're lucky
so
I wasn't.
Today.
I'm not doing the broadcast because I'd be drinking the Kool-Aid full time.
Would you really?
Yeah. But no, Ivory had a great game.
Were you disappointed with anybody on defense? Because I got to say, I expected a little more from
Harris had a good
Demario
game.
Davis today. A little more I expected out of him.
Harris had a good game.
Harris was okay.
Yeah.
He was good. He did his job.
He did his job.
Demario Davis, I expected a little more. You know, Kyle Wilson's another guy. Didn't he have an easy pick or a good chance at one and didn't cash in? All right.
We'll see in the next couple of weeks when everybody comes back and they're healthy. And we'll see.
Next week
we have Green Bay, I believe, right? Is it Green Bay next week? They just play Green Bay.
At Green Bay.
It's going to be a big test.
So I'm going to go with the one downfall being we didn't force any turnovers against a young, inexperienced team in terms of the quarterback. But we had some nice hits, but I want more. I want more nasty.
The running game, keep the running game going, what you're doing. You ran for 112, even though Oakland stinks. But still, you did it good. You did what you had to do.
Yeah, 212 yards rushing was great. And you had the big play. The big play wasn't on defense. The big play was a 71-yard touchdown by Ivory. That was a big.
And he's lucky before he didn't celebrate. Nothing happened.
Because what was the score before that?
It was 7-13, wasn't it?
It was 13-7, right?
13-7.
So that made it 9.
They went for the two-point. They missed.
So 19-7, you know, right. At that point it seemed like it put the game away because defensively they were in total control in the second half.
Yeah.
Carr couldn't set his feet. He couldn't get comfortable. And it showed his rookie. And listen, he still had a good day, 20 of 32, only a .151, just a lot of short passes. But he threw two touchdowns, didn't throw any picks, got sacked a couple times. But still, respectable for a rookie performance. But most of his good plays were in the first half. So
let me ask you this question. They brought Vic in.
Yeah, for one play.
Was it one or was it two? Did he come in another play?
And he may have
handed the ball off.
He threw a pass, and one time he handed it off, right?
Now, you wanted him to go into the slot and do all this other stuff. What do you think? What do you think they're just showing
maybe
a little
bit.
No,
this is stuff you might see as the season goes on, but I would use him as much as I can, get him on the field with Chris Johnson. Yeah, why not? He's 35 years old or whatever it is. How long is he going to be around? I will say this. On the first drive, the Jets moved the ball right down the field.
Yeah.
Now, it didn't affect what went on. Because they missed the chance at a touchdown because of penalties. But when he came in to hand off the ball, it did disrupt the flow. I mean, Geno was moving the ball right down the field. I don't know if I would have done it on that particular drive. I would have brought him in on a drive where maybe things weren't going as scripted. But they brought him in.
He
handed off.
Times.
The run play really went nowhere.
Right.
And he went out. Right. Fine. So I will say that I wasn't happy with that. The other play he came in the red zone, when he rolled out and had the chance to throw a touchdown pass, he should have hit Decker for the touchdown. He didn't. Misfired. But good play call by Morningwig at that point. I thought that was a good play call, and it just wasn't executed. We got somebody on hold. Put the caller through. Who's on hold for us?
Rich.
It's Rich from Manhattan.
Hey, Rich, how are you?
How are you tonight?
Are you drinking the Kool-Aid, Rich, like me?
No. That final touchdown that they gave up just sucked the joy out of me.
Was that a classic example of an NFL backdoor cover, Rich?
That just was awful.
But I will say, Rich, that was a good catch he made. He didn't
it
make
was
a good...
Hold on! Catch. Who cares about the catch? He's a Raider. They ain't going anywhere.
It was a very artistic,
Rich,
talented catch.
I know how you think, Rich.
It, though.
Rich from Manhattan is big into his picks. Rich, the Jets early in the week probably lay in 5 points. By game time, it was 6.5 points. They're winning 19-7.
I thought it was going to be
was
a blowout.
Was the fix in on the cover?
Oh,
I know how you're thinking. You're not happy
right.
about that.
But it was not an artistically gifted game by either team. It was a snooze fest.
Yes, it was.
It was just.
Well, give us your impressions. And just say. What did you think in the first half? The second half.
In trouble next week in Green Bay.
Okay.
After that, we'll see. But.
I'm still going with 10
wins.
What
are you, speechless? Tell us who you were happy with, who you weren't happy with. What do you got for us?
I was happy with Harris.
Okay.
Thank you.
I was happy with Pryor.
Were you happy when he dropped that potential touchdown interception?
No,
all right.
But overall, he played a very good game.
All right. When he dropped that pick, you sat there and said, you're officially a Jet. I know you said that. I know you thought that.
Well
Pryor had, what, he had three solo tackles.
Now that you bring it up, okay, welcome to the club.
I knew it.
Jet football.
I knew it.
And, of course, that run by Ivory was the second longest touchdown run in franchise history.
Something else, huh?
It is something
else. That was pretty good. The Chris's, they give us a running game that, we really didn't have.
Who was it second to? Bruce Harper or the other guy? There was a name.
I don't know who has the record.
Do you know the longest run in Jet history wasn't even a touchdown? It was Johnny Johnson in 1993. Ran 90 yards. 90 yards. Might have been 94.
How did he go 94 yards and not get a touchdown?
Sunday night game against the Bears. I was there with my cousin. He went from the Jet 5-yard line to the Bears 5-yard line. The Jets lost the game 19-7. I'll never forget the game.
Well, you know, Ivory almost got caught at the end of this, too, because he was ready to start celebrating before he went in the end zone, and the guy almost got him and tackled him actually into the end zone. That's how it happens.
Yeah, how'd you feel about that, Cronus? Cronus, we got a cricket
first.
In the studio. I think this cricket here was waiting for you to call. Come on.
Get over the goal line first, then you can celebrate.
I agree, 100%.
You know, well, what does he think he's going to be? Was this going to be Leon Lett?
Or Deshaun Jackson?
Rich, I want to ask you a question. What did you think of Geno's performance besides the first two turnovers after he settled down? What did you think of him? Did you think him as a future Jet quarterback coming in this year? Is Geno's Geno now? I'm happy with him. I was killing him.
He was okay today.
He played well.
He did well.
He was all right.
He was all right. It's the Raiders. Am I right? It's the Raiders.
He's no Ken O'Brien.
They've been lousy for 12 years now.
Of course he's no Ken O'Brien.
He's no Richard Todd.
You don't think he'll wind up being better than Richard Todd?
No.
Richard Todd had a lot of pressure following up Joe Namath. I'll give him that. He was good coming out of Alabama, right?
But so far, he'll probably better than your boy, Brownie Nagel.
Oh, my God. See, that's the problem, Rich. The top six quarterbacks in Jet history, for whatever it's worth, five of them are first-round picks. There ain't a second-round pick up there. I mean, Brownie Nagel and Kellen Clemens, that's the only guys I can think of, and they both failed miserably. So right now, I got to say Geno Smith is definitely ahead of those two, right? We can look at that as a positive?
We can hope.
We can hope. All right, do you have anything to say about the coaching? Did you like Morningwood's play calling? Did you like anything
defensively? No, they got to stop with the gadget plays.
All right, so you don't want any gadget plays.
Because if they say that Geno has an NFL arm,
right,
why do they rely on these gadget plays where he uses his legs? That means they don't have faith in his arm, or it's not really there. And they're just selling us a used car.
Right. Well, I would agree with that from a standpoint of, like, today, the play that they had Vic throwing the pass that should have went for a touchdown, but it didn't because of his inaccurate throw, that kind of play, I wouldn't use that on the Raiders. I'd be saving that for a game when I really need it. Today should have been controlled from start to finish. It wasn't, but the response in the second half was much better, especially defensively, because I thought, I don't know how you saw it, but I thought Carr was too comfortable in the first half, and in the second half, that was more like a Jet defense that I would hope to see.
The only thing I could say with this whole thing was Carr's a rookie quarterback starting in the NFL's first game.
I thought Carr did pretty good.
But that's the problem. The Jets shouldn't have made him do pretty good. The Jets should have been in his face, sacking him. They should have been all over him, knocking passes down. It should have been it's his first NFL game. He's a rookie.
Well, Houston Texans should have done that to Mark Sanchez, but the Jets won that game.
Yeah, they did. And they weren't supposed to, but they controlled that one. They played great defensively that day also.
Right. I agree.
But, all right, Rich.
But they got to get Milliner back. He's got to be the Milliner of the last few games of last season against Aaron Rodgers. Otherwise, they're going to be in trouble.
He already said he's the best. He's going to be the best.
We'll get a better. Well, listen, the Packers' offensive line, not the strongest. Seattle abused them all game long on Thursday night. But we'll get a better idea of how handcuffed we are at defensive back when they play the Packers next week.
Well, let me tell you something. The Packers got some injuries as well.
Yeah, well, good.
And the Jets could run on them.
All right. Well, let's do it. Let's
Marshawn Lynch, they ran for 212 this week. If the Jets control the ball and run.
I mean, B.J. Raji's out for the year, so that's a big hit for their defense.
Rich, before you go, I want to tell one more thing. 32 days, Rich. You know what I'm talking about. And I'll leave it at that.
32 days.
Yeah.
Well, I look at it as 8 days.
Training camp, he's talking
about. I'm talking about the first game.
I care about when they come in for the physical.
All right. Physicals. Oh, he cares about physicals. That's
I'm hardcore. Physical.
Is Reinhardt making the team?
He should.
Are you willing to admit you have a man crush on Tavares?
Do I have a man crush?
He's bringing this man crush thing.
Well, my partner obviously has a lot of man crushes in life. I found out tonight Ken O'Brien was one.
Of course.
I know he has a Tavares jersey. That's got to be number two. How about you?
I have a Tavares.
All right, good. Thank you.
Do
you have anything else to join before this cricket falls asleep here next to me?
Wait a minute, Rich. What are you talking about? You don't have a crush on Tavares?
He does.
No, he's a great player, but
great.
No,
he's the best.
He's a big Dennis Popper guy.
The way I view some other players in the NHL that maybe
hold on, Rich.
Are not
one more thing.
What is this? What are you interviewing him? We have a show to do.
Okay, Rich. But should the Jets retire Tinelli's jersey this year?
The Jets and the Islanders.
I mean, the Islanders retire Tinelli's.
The Winnipeg Jets should retire Tinelli's jersey. You're right.
Talk about the Islanders retire.
Right
Tinelli.
After they do Anders Steen.
We're gonna have to retake this entire segment, folks.
Let's go,
Rich.
No,
should they retire Tinelli's number? No. How about Ken Morrow?
Of course.
No.
All right, forget about it. He's out of here. Thank you for calling in, Rich. We'll talk to you next show.
How can he say that?
That's it. Because that's what he said. He said no. He's a hard marker. That's
and
it.
And
we gave him good time. I had to hang up.
Okay. But I will say this.
Once you try to switch to Islander, what song do we have queued up tonight, Brian? Is Islanders in that song whatsoever? That he's allowed to bring up the Islanders?
Hold on a minute.
Come
Rich.
On. You couldn't get through. He's
knows
already
more
off.
About hockey
he's
than anybody
off.
I know.
He's already off.
Okay, I'm just saying.
That's good. He knows a lot about
How
hockey.
How does he not say Kenny Morrow?
He's the Mel Kiper of hockey drafts. He's good.
How do they not say they don't belong
Can we
the
go
Rockies?
Around the NFL quickly?
Okay, let's go to the NFL.
Because we're going to have to wait forever for our next caller after that. The cricket is going to have to get on the line and talk about the Jet game. Let's go. Listen, it's
Denver.
Not a game. No, forget about Denver. Give me
Denver's up 10-0.
Give me an update. Do you know who's
doing the 10-0. Manning threw a 3-yard pass to Julius Thomas.
Second quarter?
Yes, it is.
You're a great update guy. All right, let's go back. Today, did you think the Saints were going to lose to the Falcons before today?
No way. No way.
How about that?
That was a major upset.
Up 13-0. Then Atlanta comes back slowly but surely, takes the lead at the end of the third quarter. By the end of this game, which after the Jet game, I only really saw the tying field goal by Matt Bryant, a 51-yard kick. And then in overtime, a 52-yard kick. I would like to know, if anybody has it out there, how many times a kicker has hit a 50-yard-plus field goal to tie a game and then a 50-yard-plus field goal to win it in overtime. I wonder if I'm able to look that up for a Waz.
I will say this.
After this show.
Matt Ryan threw for 448 yards with 3 touchdowns against New Orleans. I thought New Orleans was going to be better.
31 out of 43.
That's your pick to win the Super Bowl.
I have the Pats beating
New Orleans.
Officially, as we switch quickly, my official Super Bowl pick is New England to beat New Orleans in the Super Bowl. 49 is the number this year.
I don't know what the number's going to be, but I think
Super Bowl, it's Super Bowl 49.
Oh, yeah, Super Bowl 49.
I have the Pats beating the Saints. I believed that Rob Ryan was going to turn that defense around. But today, it looked like it early when they were up 13-0. But 448 yards and 3 touchdown passes later, Matt Ryan gets his team within a field goal. They tie it up and win it in overtime. And Breeze, 29 out of 42, a touchdown and a pick today. So not a great day in terms of touchdown passes, but he does his job. They should have won the game.
Too. It's like playing
you
at home.
You score 31 points, you should win the
of
game.
Course,
especially if your defense is supposed to be good.
And it's like playing at home because you're both in domes and everything.
There were no other notable performances.
Mark
Ingram putting up 2 touchdowns and 60 yards rushing. So I guess a lot of guys will be picking up him for that.
A lot of people are picking Atlanta to go far this year. Anyway, now let's
did you even get to see any of the games? Because the Jet game, that's the one problem I have with the NFL Packers. I'm watching the Jet game.
Too focused.
There's so many games on at 1 o'clock. By the time the Jet game's over,
it's over.
You know, I might see a couple of good, Alcola fantastic finishes, if you will.
I got Seattle winning the whole thing this year.
Yeah, oh, wow. That's a real gutsy pick from the Sweden.
I know with defense.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
You don't even know who you got them playing yet. Get back to me on that one.
Yeah, I'll let you know at the end of the week.
Oh, that's great. Who do you have them playing? You're changing your pick. First of all, you didn't even have them when we talked about it on
the phone. I did have Seattle.
You told me tonight you were changing it.
I said, I don't know.
Buffalo goes into Soldier Field, and the Bears put forth an embarrassing performance. They embarrassed the legend of Mike Singletary and Walter Payton, God rest his soul, as they lose to the Bills. This ain't the 1990s Bills. They haven't made the playoffs since 1999.
This is
23-20 in overtime on a Dan Carpenter field goal, and the Bills go into Chicago, grab themselves a win and a steak dinner, and escape from town.
How does a man
who
couldn't complete a pass in the preseason, he couldn't do nothing. They were talking about not even starting him in the preseason. All of a sudden now, he threw for 173 yards. Cutler threw for 349 with 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. This is unbelievable.
Right. Yeah, but on the flip side, in terms of controlling the clock and the ball, the Bills had 3 runners, Fred Jackson, Anthony Dixon, and C.J. Spiller, combined for 170 yards rushing. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
170 yards rushing from 3 guys? Guess what? Matt Forte didn't stand out. C.J. Spiller got the touchdown on a short reception.
Yeah.
Field goals led the way, and they win 23-20.
That's a big upset.
They were up in that game.
Because Buffalo's going to stink
this year. At one point, 17-7 at halftime.
Let me tell you about this. What about Cleveland and Pittsburgh? They came back to tie it up.
Let's talk about that game because that was a tale of two games.
Pittsburgh was winning big.
Right?
Yeah, it was a tale of two games.
The first half, Pittsburgh won 27-3, didn't they?
Yeah.
The second half.
27-3. That's what they're up.
The second half. The Browns win 24-3, but they lose the game because once they tied it, too much time for Big Ben, right?
Yeah.
Because it was tied with 10 minutes to
Pittsburgh
go down the field.
A
41-yard field goal wins it. Roethlisberger, 365 yards passing, touchdown and a pick. Hoyer, 230 and a touchdown. Anybody else have a big day? Terrence West, receiver for Cleveland, 100 yards receiving. Never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
Isaiah Crowell had 2 touchdown catches. And for Pittsburgh, the pot-smoking duo of Bell
Right.
Who's his partner? He had 109 yards rushing and a touchdown, so I guess.
And
the other half of that, LeGarrette Blount, he had 6 yards rushing, but he had a touchdown, too.
Well, also, Bell also had 88 yards receiving on that one, too.
And Antonio Brown, 116 yards receiving. So Pittsburgh wins. I would feel bad for Cleveland fans, but they got LeBron back in town, so they'll be okay.
Yeah.
All right. Tennessee goes into Kansas City and wins.
That was huge.
How about that?
That was big. I thought Kansas City was going to win.
Nice day for Jake Locke, 22 of 33, two touchdown passes, 266 on the yardage. Not too bad. Alex Smith didn't do too well, right? So much for being a game manager.
Well, let me tell you this.
Tennessee takes it on the road.
Last year, Jamaal Charles.
Oh, what are you talking about? Because you have him on your fantasy team.
Well, I'm just saying. Hold on.
He
had 19 touchdowns.
Right, he didn't do anything.
He had 12 rushing, seven receiving. He did nothing. He ran for seven carries for 19 yards.
So without seeing the game, let's give a little credit to the Tennessee game planning.
I'm shocked. You should be. They have nobody. Sean Green, he's running the ball. Are you kidding me?
There you go. Minnesota goes to St. Louis and takes one on the road. Final score there, 34-6, as Matt Castle goes 17 of 25 for 170 and two touchdowns. How about that? As Cordell Patterson runs for 102 yards and a touchdown. Not AP. How about that? I didn't even see that game. That's impressive. Ruin your fantasy day or what?
No. No, but I knew Minnesota was going to win this game.
And here's another big AFC East special upset. Miami taking on the hated Patriots.
That's got to be the biggest one.
Come back, down 20-10 at the half. They scored 23 unanswered points in the second half. Shut the Pats out in the second half. 23-0 and win the game 33-20. Wow.
That's amazing.
Ryan Tannehill, two touchdown passes. That's all you need to know about his game. And no Sean Marino changes homes and runs for a buck 34 and a touchdown.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, good game.
Can we get some background music, Brian? Because I'm starting to bore myself here. You can put that same song on for the Jets. Now you want something else?
That was it, folks.
The DJ Jacksonville,
Philly.
Not done yet. Philly beat Jacksonville.
Philly was down.
You scare in your 17. Survivor League.
17. Jacksonville was up 17 to Zippo at halftime.
They had a chance.
And Philly comes storming back and shuts them out the third and fourth quarter and scored 34 unanswered points.
How about it?
In two quarters.
Chad Henne.
And I thought that they were going to blow them out from the beginning, but we're getting a little nervous.
Oh, yeah, we got a little SWAT music in the background for Kenny O'Brien's relatives and me and you. Chad Henne, 24 of 43, 266.
The guy you don't like.
And two touchdown passes. Nick Foles, much better in the second half, 322 yards and two touchdowns. LeSean McCoy ran for 74 yards. His partner, though, Mr. Sproles, 71 yards and a touchdown. 145 yards rushing between those two guys. And Jeremy Maclin back in action.
Yeah, he's
97 yards and a touchdown. And the Eagles avoid the embarrassment of losing to Jacksonville when they are picked by everybody and their mother to win the division in the NFC East.
Let me ask you about Washington now with Griffin.
Go ahead. You can cover the rest of the games.
29 of 37. Right. Threw for 267. No picks, no touchdowns, no nothing. Nothing spectacular. They ran. I guess Houston's back. What'd they lose, like 9 games in a row or something last year?
They lost every game last year at the end.
They were losing everything.
They got their first pick. They took Clowney. He hurt his knee. Let's see how he is tomorrow.
What did Deshaun Jackson do? That was supposed to be the big 62 yards.
Well, Griffin threw for 267, right?
Yeah, that was it.
Morris ran for 91, but none of that resulted in touchdowns. Would they have a one-yard plunge by somebody? I never heard of that guy.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick goes to Houston and wins his first game with 206 passing.
Yeah, the Ivy League boy does it.
Yeah.
Gets the win. Carolina wins with their backup, Derek Anderson. Remember him in Cleveland?
Yes. He's back.
He takes Carolina to a win. Let me ask you this, all right?
I don't know why.
Hold on. Let's talk about something serious here with Tampa. I like Lovie Smith. He's a good coach. But why would you take a quarterback and give his job to somebody?
Glennon threw
19 touchdowns and 8 picks last year, right?
Yeah.
Josh McCown, I don't care, had a big game on a Monday night last year. The guy's 35 years old. He hasn't even thrown for 9,000 yards in his career. And you bring him down, you make him the start. I'm not saying that's why they lost today. But how does Glennon How does Mike Glennon just lose his job like that? I don't get it. Because they said that Josh McCown was the starter before camp even started.
Yeah.
Well, he threw for .183 and two interceptions.
And I thought they loved Glennon last year. He was great. He was the best
rookie quarterback in the league.
Yeah. He went to actually Kenny O'Brien's school.
I don't get it, man.
Of quarterback school.
Can you answer that one? Like, why would a franchise want to do that? At least let them compete the way the Jets did it with Geno and Vic. The fix was in with that one, too. You know that they wanted Geno starting, but Glennon, like, he had no chance to start. I don't understand that. I like Lovie Smith. I'm sure the defense will be much improved, but I don't get that. That makes no sense to me.
This game right here is going to break a lot of hearts because there's a lot of Cowboy fans out there, and they did absolutely nothing today when the 49ers dominated.
The Niners are supposed to bury them, weren't they?
The Niners are all banged up.
So what?
They have more. So many. They have like seven guys injured on the defense.
All right. Justin Smith had two sacks. Ahmad Brooks had a
suspended.
So they got to the quarterback enough. Several hits. I mean, Romo didn't look comfortable at all. He was getting chased for his life.
Yeah. A bunch of turnovers.
Patrick Willis had six solo tackles, a pass defense, and an interception. Future Hall of Famer Patrick Willis.
The best.
The best is right.
He's the best.
So the defense must have been doing something good out there today because Romo looked like garbage. I don't care about his 281-yard
pass. That was at the end.
In garbage time. He threw three interceptions.
Threw three picks. Murray fumbled. Good. In the beginning, they ran back.
Des Bryant, I think he wanted out of the game, so he told everybody he had cramps or he was feeling dizzy or something like that.
He had 55 yards.
So.
Said it was over. That's exactly what was going on. He dehydrated.
I guess DeMarco Murray was the one bright spot. 118 yards and a touchdown.
In the beginning, he fumbled, though.
All right. He was the one bright spot. I guess if you got to pick a bright spot, he's it, right?
And Frank Gore still rumbling. How old is Gore now? 66 yards?
He's got to be in his 30s now.
Oh, yeah. That guy's been around forever, that guy. That guy's rumbling and rolling. Frank Gore.
He had 60 yards. I mean,
Kaepernick played a good game. The 49ers played good. They're gonna be good. They're going to be back again. It's going to be them in the playoffs again this year.
Frank Gore is 31 years old now. 31. Still going. Not much to worry about when you're up in a game by a lot. I mean, that game was, 28-3 at the half? They slept through the rest of the game and just played some defense at times.
Cincinnati took care of Baltimore at home. Baltimore was home.
Cincinnati, they take five field goals to start the game? I mean, they should have won that game by even more.
Yeah, I know.
They should be a strong offensive team this year.
They're going to surprise some people this year.
They're going to win the division. Who are they going to surprise? They won the division last year.
You're right. They're going to win it again this year.
Surprising nobody.
Same thing with the
Hopefully
Jets.
We got another call because we're going to break in a few minutes. Let's see if we got somebody on hold here. But we touched on all the games, folks. We got you all the scores. And right now, the Broncos still lead 10-0. Second quarter, 9 minutes to go in that contest. New school versus old school. Luck versus Peyton.
Peyton's
and right now, before the break, we're going to take one more call. Who's online?
Yeah, what's going on? It's Jake Brown. How you
folks,
doing?
Folks, this is a new segment. A new segment at Sports Talk 1240. I'm going to call it 5 Good Minutes with a young Sports Talk host.
Talented.
And that is one of the members of this family here. Jake Brown.
Very talented.
Does a show at least once, twice a month here. GB Sports, is that what it's called, Jake? He's all over Twitter. He's all over CBS Sports. Jake, thanks for calling in. 5 Good Minutes. You were at the Jet game today. Tell us, buddy, what was it like? Tell us the atmosphere and your impressions of the game. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, the atmosphere is really good. Sold out crowd, not many empty seats. Just some, of course, in the PSLs at the 50-yard line, all the corporate people who didn't show up. But a lot of Raider fans behind the Raiders bench. Anytime they made a play, which was usually a pretty bad call by the refs, they would go crazy. There were a lot of flags today. But definitely a good crowd, a lot of Raider fans, good energy. Jets didn't play their best, but squeaked out a win, so that's all that matters.
So first half, were you a little concerned with the penalties? I mean, there were two turnovers. That's going to happen. You know, you're not happy with it. You're going against a young quarterback. But the penalties, you know, it's been going on all preseason, Jake. Did that concern you a little bit in terms of the discipline factor, especially Willie Colon?
It did a little bit because there was an abnormal amount. There was a point, I think, where there were more penalty yards on the Jets than the Raiders had total offensive yards,
right,
which was, like, hard. I'd never heard of that. So, yeah, it was definitely concerning. But remember, the refs this year, they're calling a lot of flags on defensive holding,
right,
illegal contact, pass interference. They're going to keep throwing the flag. They've been instructed to do that. So we're going to see a lot of that. But, yeah, it's something Rex has got to clean up because when you play Green Bay next week, a mad, mad Green Bay team, that's coming home for their home opener, that place is going to be crazy at Lambeau. So they definitely have to clean it up, because if penalties aside, I think their defense played pretty well, at least in the second half. I thought their pass rush was pretty absent.
Well, you know, Oakland didn't have their first penalty till the third period. And,
I mean,
Oakland played a clean game.
They were the more
half.
Disciplined team in the first half. They didn't make mistakes.
Very surprising.
I was surprised. The rookie looked pretty good in the first half, and then the second half, the Jets finally put some pressure on him and had a couple sacks.
But, Jake, let me ask you this question. Shouldn't have the Jets been in his face smashing him? He's a rookie, first game starting. They should have been in his face, all knocking down passes. That's what I believe. They should have been full boat going at him.
You're at the game, Jake, as opposed to watching on TV where it's a great view. Was that your impression, though? Because I felt in the first half that he was a little too comfortable back there. And in the second half, they were getting more hurries. They were getting more hits even when he got rid of the ball, and they got a couple of sacks. Was that your impression in the first half that maybe they weren't going after him as much as they should have?
Yeah, that's what I was telling my friends. I said, where is the pressure? What's going on? In the third quarter, he finally saw it. He saw Carr pull his best Tony Romo impression where he fell over without barely getting touched. We won't talk about Tony Romo after how embarrassing the Cowboys look today. But I felt they could have put much more pressure on him. Sheldon Richardson finally got it going in the second half, Mo Wilkerson. And then I was surprised the safeties. Pryor looked really good today. I really liked what I saw from him. Right. He got his first career sack, and he was a hard hitter. He had a huge tackle, I remember, in the first half. So they need to start using those linebackers and those safeties to come in and attack these young quarterbacks, because I thought they could have played a lot better today, and they're lucky that they even squeaked it out, because there were times where you were saying, what the heck's going on? But you know what? They're rusty. It's the first game of the season.
Right.
I think they'll get it going next week. So I think they're going to get pounded next week by Green Bay.
That's a great thought. Let's keep it positive. You know, you and all the other young hosts,
I don't know about that.
You always get on me for being cynical and tough on the Jets. We kept it positive. I got a new song for when they win games. You'll hear it later on, or just put on the replay of the start of the show tomorrow, and you'll hear the new theme song that we have for the Jets when they win games. But you're at the game, and let me just tell you quickly, you brought up the Raider fans. The Raider fans travel in great amounts. Let me give you an easy one. My in-laws live out in Arizona. I was out there one summer. I went to an exhibition game. The Cardinals were playing the Raiders at Tempe Stadium, where the Arizona State football team plays. And I couldn't believe the stadium seemed like it was half Raider fans. And that's coming down from Northern California all the way to Arizona. And that's an exhibition game, so that's how rabid those fans are, and they are as good as any group there is out there in the NFL in terms of traveling. They are.
Yeah, and a lot of them belong in the circus, is what they wear. I mean, they painted their faces. I mean, surprisingly, I saw some good-looking women who were Raiders fans, but I didn't think those exist. I thought they were all just monsters. But they're crazy, and they were out in full force. So I was a little surprised by that, but I'll give credit to them for showing up, even though they know.
It's like a cult, like, you know, Kiss fans when they go to concerts. It's nuts what they do.
Hold on. I just want to say Denver scored again, 17-0.
17-0, yep.
Julius Thomas with another pass from Peyton Manning for 35
yards. Well, maybe
yards.
By the end of the show you'll pick them to go to the Super Bowl against Seattle. That'd be
maybe.
Great. All right, Jake, so you were at the game today. So what did you do for yourself? Now, listen, the bulk of the games were at 1 o'clock anyway, so you'll be watching highlights the rest of the night. But did you tailgate and watch the Dallas game afterwards in the parking lot? Is that what you did?
Well, I tailgated before. I got there around 10:45, and then we got out pretty quick after. No, I came back, and I watched the second half here. We got back in like 30, 45 minutes. Traffic wasn't terrible.
All right. Which is surprising.
But yeah, watching Luck get shut out right now. But we know he's the king of coming back in the second half. So.
Let me ask you this question. At the very beginning with Geno, what was your impression of Geno right away, right off the bat? Because in the beginning, I thought he was a little shaky. I thought he settled down. I thought he did great.
I thought the pick wasn't a terrible throw. That was just a great defensive play.
Charles
corner came out of nowhere.
Charles Woodson's a Hall of Famer. It was a great play.
It was a great
play.
He was just sitting. He was sitting and waiting. He lined him up. He was just waiting for it, and he cashed in.
I really liked the. I didn't like how they had Vic out there, the decoy at times, but I did love the play where they. And it to him, he made the throw that was Aaron in the end zone too. I think it was Decker. That was a play that could easily work if Vic throws that on the money.
You know, you're absolutely right.
That'd be a little. I know you love Vic, so I know you.
No, I don't.
Crazy
think,
on that play.
The only thing I said, I thought that was a great play call by Morningwig, and he misfired. It should have been an easy touchdown pass for him. But just from this overall game, the way they should have controlled this game, I would rather see that game, that play in a game where they really need it. You know, when they need to pull a big play against the Patriots, you know, or against Green Bay next week. But,
well, I'm sure
but that was
gonna
a good
bring
play
it out
call.
Again. They'll bring it back again, and it
well,
really
it,
it was just a bad throw. But it's good that they're trying stuff like that. Just don't do the stuff for a victory receiver because you're wasting a receiver spot. If you're going to have him in the game, hand it to him, let him throw, do something with that. Just don't have him out as a decoy. I think it's just a waste of a guy on the field at that point.
Right. Let me tell you. It didn't affect the drive, but the first drive, I was telling John before, I actually didn't like. On the first drive, I thought Geno moved him back down the field real well, and I, even though it didn't affect
penalties.
It, the penalties forced the field goal, but I didn't like when Vic came in at that point to just hand off. Like, that to me disrupts what a guy is doing. So that's an example of what I, when I don't want to see that kind of
and
stuff.
It makes you cringe because it makes you think of Tebow,
yes.
And that's exactly what it was.
Right.
So let's hope they don't do that a little too much because
yeah.
We know Marty's got some tricks up his sleeve, so we'll see.
Right. Well, if Geno keeps it simple next week and they keep running the ball like they did today, you know, they ran for 200-something
yeah.
Today.
Ivory was incredible. I was really surprised how good Ivory was, and CJ looks really fast. He's good.
Yep.
I want to see CJ more as a receiver. They didn't take advantage with that as much as I thought they would. But, yeah, this run game looks really promising, and I love that they have three backs because we know it was Chris Johnson – could be a guy that gets hurt. Ivory's been a guy that got hurt throughout his career, so now you're going to keep these guys fresh. But as Seth Waller told me that he thinks it's going to be around 40, 35, and 30, something like that, or
right.
However that works out. So they're going to get a pretty even distribution. So I think that's going to keep them healthy and keep their run game their biggest factor on offense.
All right. Well, you know what?
We'll see next week. I'm confident about next week. I think it's going to be. I think the Jets are going to keep it close.
Listen,
week.
I told you the good thing. The Jets ran for 212 yards, and defensively, when you only give up 25 yards rushing on 15 carries, this is the new theme song, Jake. I hope you like it. The name of the song is Jet. So we're going to take it to break. I want to thank you for calling in. I'm glad you had a great day today. Let's hope the Jets build on this, get back to work, erase those penalties. And let's see if they can still win in Green Bay. For you, Jake, the Jets are 8-3 lifetime against the Packers. And they haven't lost to them in Green Bay
so
in a long, long time.
Start drinking the Kool-Aid.
All
right, start
buddy.
Drinking the Kool-Aid like we do.
Yeah, well, I predicted 10-6, so I got some confidence in the team. So.
Well, let's have you right.
I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, man, thanks for calling in.
Yep.
And folks, we're going to take a quick break, and we got about 25 to 30 minutes left. Want to call in? 631-888-8811. The Jets are 1-0! Take us to break, Bri.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan, or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out, or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you can find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back, and we're going to switch bases now, unless you call in and you want to talk about Jet football. We've talked about it enough. They beat a team they were supposed to beat. I hate the Raiders. You
so
hate the Raiders. Makes it a better win. We want to know. We went over the other game.
If there's any Raider fans out there, call in. We'll tell you how much we hate them.
888-831-888-811. Denver's still up 17-0, 3 minutes before halftime, but right now we're going to switch to baseball because we have 2 weeks left of pennant chasing games.
Oh, yeah.
And the
Yankees
don't look like they're going to be in it. This will be the first time that the Yankees missed the playoffs in back-to-back seasons.
And who knows how long.
Since the early 90s with Stump Merrill. How about that, Sweeney? What do you think about that?
It's a shocker.
Right now, the Yankees sit 4.5 games out of a wild card spot.
4.5
Not
games.
Not good.
Out. Not good.
Not good with 2 weeks to go, right? Is that
so Baltimore's got this locked up, I'm assuming. They're definitely in.
Was it 3 weeks left of baseball,
maybe? Yeah, 3 weeks left. It goes to the end of September, right?
Oakland has the first wild card, and they're falling fast, 2-8 in their last 10. They're 80-62, but two games up for a wild card spot.
I don't think they're going to do it.
Seattle has the other one right now, 78-64. I will be out in Seattle starting tomorrow to cover the Mariners. Hopefully get an interview with James Jones, who's a product out of Brooklyn, New York. Went to LIU University. Broke Edgar Martinez's Seattle Mariners record for most hits to start a Mariner career. The old record, I think, was 10 games in a row by Edgar. James Jones is not the one in football, the one in baseball. Young guy. As a rookie, I believe he hit in 13 straight games to start his career, so hopefully we'll catch up with him. But I'll be out in Seattle starting tomorrow for 3 days, and hopefully I'll get an article or two up on the website for you. We'll see how that all goes. But they have the other wild card.
So the West is going to get the two wild cards, Oakland and Seattle.
Maybe. You got Detroit a game back. They're playing right now. What's the score of that game? 3-0 still?
3-0 Detroit.
All right. Cleveland is 3.5 back at 74-67. And the Yankees are 4.5 back at 73-68. And the only other one, I guess, is Toronto. They're 73-69. They're 5 back, so we'll keep them there with 3 weeks to go.
So the Angels are the hottest team right now.
How about them, right? Doesn't Baltimore have the best record since the All-Star break? I saw one stat. They were like 30-15 since the break at one point. They're 7-3 in their last 10.
Yeah.
83-59. They have a 9.5 game lead on the Yankees.
For all you Yankee fans out there, your Yankees are 4-6 in the last 10 games.
Wow.
You guys get the act together. What is going on with that
and
team?
And the Angels, who were so far back early in the year, flew past Oakland. 7 game lead at 87-55. Let me ask you a question.
No, let me ask
you this. The Detroit Tigers and the Oakland A's make the big trade for pitchers at the trade deadline.
Price.
And they've both been lousy since. Right. Why is that?
Well, now let me ask you this.
Why is that?
Because I don't know. Because and
Price pitched in the American early League. On.
Price pitched in the American League. He was on Tampa.
Unbelievable that those teams have
Tampa's worst out, worst couple like two a week ago. Week,
I don't care about Tampa. I'm talking about Detroit.
I'm saying that he pitched in the American League. He
right.
Against all these teams.
No, I know.
Like
he won a Cy Young for Tampa. I know.
Yeah. I mean, look, the guy had his worst game a week or two ago.
He got hammered by the Yankees, right?
That he ever played in his life. Yeah,
what did he give up, like 13 straight hits?
Yeah.
That was disgusting.
How about Oakland? They traded no power hitter.
That was a big mistake. You want to get John Lester, I understand. But to give up Cespedes?
And they're 2-8 in the last 10. They fell. How you have no power on that team
they're
anyway.
Lucky they grabbed Adam Dunn for a few homers
yeah.
In the last 3 weeks.
Why would you do that?
Has
Lester been that lights out?
I don't know, but if Oakland don't get their act together, you're going to see some King of Hindsight guys come out with articles slamming Billy Bean and Moneyball. What do you think of that?
He's trying to tweak it a little. He's trying to get a little too cute, I think.
Man. Now, the National League, the Nationals,
they
got the Braves right where they want them.
Right. Braves haven't.
And they're playing 500 ball the last 10 games, but still, a 7-game lead?
So they got it. They got that locked up.
Washington's got that division.
Yeah.
Atlanta's going to have to battle with San Fran and the Dodgers. Two of those three teams probably for a while.
Me, personally, I think the Dodgers are the best team in the National League.
81-62, on paper, but only a 2.5 game lead right now.
But if you look on paper with that team.
Oh, they're pitching.
The pitchers,
Beckett's out for the year, all right? They got a little dinged up. Rube came back.
They have the best pitcher staff in. I mean, Detroit does now, maybe.
Well, I don't know about that.
Kershaw's
Verlander, what's he, 12-12? What's his record? He's a .500 pitcher right now.
I think he's just throwing
too much.
I've
seen him get slammed, too.
I think he's just throwing too much over the last couple of years.
I don't think much of Detroit right now. I'll give Kansas City credit right now for still being in this race.
Me, too.
They're hanging tough.
The Dodgers are my pick.
And they took care of the Yankees, too, by the way.
Yeah,
Shutting them out again today.
Yeah. The Dodgers, but talking about the National League, the Dodgers are primed doing this thing this year.
You think the Dodgers, what'd you do before the year? But before the season, I picked the Dodgers to beat Baltimore in the World Series.
You did.
So I have a chance to be right about that. We'll see.
I had the Dodgers winning the whole thing.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
You sure about that?
Yes, I did. I didn't know you picked. This is the first I've heard of you taking Baltimore.
Well, I can verify it, though, because it's on cronysports.com. You can look it up.
Okay.
Extreme intelligence. It's very hard to find factual, visual,
LA,
tangible proof on paper.
I had the L.A. connection. The L.A. Dodgers versus the Anaheim Angels.
In the World Series?
Yeah.
Yeah, now you
in California.
Here you had that before the season?
Yeah.
You're a genius.
I got it written in this little piece of paper.
You're killing me. All right, the Cardinals have a 4.5 game lead. Talk about an organization that just runs themselves extremely well, right? I mean, Milwaukee was in first place almost the entire year. And now they're 5 games back.
They're
1-9 in their last 10.
Unbelievable.
And the Cardinals have a 4.5 game lead. Good. I don't even like Milwaukee. Ryan Braun doesn't deserve to go to the playoffs. Right? See, now look at that. I just pointed out a steroid guy. Right? I used to love him. Now I don't. Why?
Your favorite
player. Because he's a liar. And then he lied twice and tried to get somebody in trouble. That poor guy that was supposed to deliver the specimen lost his job probably because of Ryan Braun.
Yeah.
What a failure he is in terms of character. Put him right next to A-Rod. I'm sure more people like him than A-Rod, but he's no different.
So San Fran's right there. I guess look at who's going to get the other wild card.
The Dodgers 2.5 games out. They're battling for first place. Whoever doesn't win that division, I think they get the wild card along with
Pittsburgh?
No. Whoever doesn't win that division
gets the wild card.
Is going to get it along with Atlanta. That's what I think.
Oh, you're saying Atlanta?
That's what I think. Atlanta's another. They're a very well-run organization. I don't think Pittsburgh will beat Atlanta out. Well, maybe I got to.
Pittsburgh made the playoffs for last year.
They're all neck and neck record-wise because right now San Fran has a 4-game lead in the wild card. Right. So then you got Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Milwaukee, are all within a half game of each other. So, you know, it's 4 teams for 2 spots basically. But let's hope Milwaukee keeps losing and they fall out of that discussion. Look at Miami. They're only 4.5 back. Do I got to include them because we include the Yankees and Toronto in the AL? Because Miami's 69-72. I'm not putting them in a discussion when they're sub .500.
No.
And the Mets are only 6.5 back? That's it?
Yeah.
I thought they hit the links already.
Well,
I thought they were golfing with you Thursday.
The Mets
out in Bethpage.
The Mets are 6-4 in the last 10. The Mets aren't playing bad.
Oh, they're on a roll.
Today.
You want to guarantee they got a shot to make it?
Nah.
You got a little miracle? McGraw, you got to believe in you?
I just don't think they have the bats.
Not.
They don't have the bats.
Why don't we talk about your boy, Clayton Kershaw?
Yeah, I love him.
Does he get the MVP?
100%. In my opinion, nobody's done what he's done. Nobody.
Absolutely not.
Nobody. He has to win it. Who else in the National League? You want to talk about the MVP. Who else in the National League stepped it up like Kershaw stepped it up for their team and has done what he's done for his team? Nobody in the... Oh, McCutcheon? He was hurt. Who else? Goldschmidt's out. Who else has done anything besides what he's done? And anyway, he's going to be the first pitcher. And this is your stat. You tweeted out.
I did this research on my own.
Let's hear it. Let it go.
Clayton Kershaw. I'm only saying it because, listen, it's already been on ESPN, but they had it 4 or 5 days after me. You can go back and tweet him and check this one. But when I saw him, he had a great start. It was before his last one. And his ERA was 1.71, 1.72. And I'm like, oh, and I'm looking at his stats, and he's won 3 consecutive ERA titles. Now, Maddux also won 3 consecutive ERA titles, Major League Baseball-wise.
Right, right.
Both leagues combined. But when I saw that, and I said, oh, Kershaw, he's got a 1.70 ERA. So far ahead of Johnny Cueto, who's 2.23. I said, he's going to be the first guy to possibly win 4 consecutive Major League Baseball ERA titles.
I had to go back
and look at Lefty Grove and Sandy Koufax, a couple other guys, and make sure nobody had done it. Because Koufax won 5 ERA titles in a row, but not
in both,
leagues combined.
Right, which is incredible.
And so Kershaw, I mean, if he's going to be the first guy to ever do that, well, if you're the first, there's got to be something special about that stat. 17-3, 6 complete games, 2 shutouts, 202 strikeouts.
And a no-hitter.
And a batting average against a 191.
And a no-hitter.
Well, I would say, of course, you got to give him the MVP. Why? Because a lot of guys, even the guys that side with hitting stats, right? Let's just go with hitting stats. Giancarlo Stanton has 36 home runs, and he has 104 ribbies, right?
What is it, what's his batting average?
Bat 293.
Not bad.
Which is good, but nothing special. He's got 30 doubles, which is good.
Where's their team?
Nothing special. But he only has 153 hits. Nothing outstanding about that. But the home run,
okay.
The home run and the ribby totals, yeah, it's impressive. It's
so Miami's still in the mix.
But now, if we look at batting average in the National League, the highest batting average is 315. Well, what's special about that? And you only have what is it? 3-6, maybe 9 or 10 guys that are batting over 300. And Daniel Murphy's one of those guys. So how special is that?
It's not too.
Of all the guys batting over 300, the only guy that might have had a shot if he kept going would have been Paul Goldschmidt, maybe.
Goldschmidt would have had it if he wasn't out for the year. Right, yeah. McCutcheon's back now. What he is?
You know, Buster Posey, 20 homers, 79 ribbies.
He's having a good year.
Big deal. He's not MVP.
Doesn't matter because Kershaw, what he's done for his team, he's got his team set up right in that.
Yeah,
right
McCutcheon,
where they are in first
21,
place.
21 homers, 73 ribbies for McCutcheon. All right, well, we're at 305.
Kershaw wins the MVP.
No,
he wins the Cy Young. He wins the MVP. He wins the ERA for both leagues. He wins it all this year. Just keep giving him the trophy.
I know he's going to pull an Oral Hershiser, take home the World Series MVP and all that stuff.
There you go. I wouldn't doubt it. That team is set to go. They're like an all-star team.
Yeah, and I'm not taking anything away from.
And they just brought up this kid too.
I'm not taking anything away from Stanton either.
No.
Outstanding power season. But nothing like he's not coming away with 50-some-odd homers or 60. You know, he's not beating the second guy by 40 homers or anything like that. You know, he's not blowing the competition away in that.
But the bottom line is the way they look at this stuff sometimes is what Kershaw's done and with his wins, he's putting his team in
first
place.
It's just you've never seen it.
Never. He's got to win the MVP. He's definitely got the Cy Young locked.
Yeah, he's not going
to win the MVP.
He's not going to win the Triple Crown of pitching because he missed a bunch of games, so he's not going to have the strikeout lead this year. But I'll tell you, a 1.70 ERA, and
it's
it could be low within the next 3 weeks. God.
He's got about, what, like 5 more starts?
Now, in the American League.
He's got 2 next week.
Yeah, in the American League, you know they're not going to give Nelson Cruz.
Well, it's already done.
Right? 37-94?
Mike Trout's one.
Do you really think Mike Trout's getting 100%. MVP?
100%.
Why?
Because look at his numbers.
31 homers, 100 ribbies. All right.
We still got
36 doubles. He's batting 284, though.
How many steals?
153 hits. He's only got 14 steals. You want to give him MVP? Excellent defender.
He's got the
what about Jose Abreu, rookie? 33 homers, 99 ribbies.
He fell off a little.
Batting 321.
He was on a streak.
Let me say this much. I did this research. I didn't put it on Twitter, though. If you want to put it up, you can claim it. No rookie has ever won the Triple Crown. No rookie. Right now, there's 3 weeks to go. Jose Abreu is fourth in batting average at 321. In home runs, he leads with 30. No, he's third with 33. So he's 4 behind Cruz. And in ribbies, he's second, 99, 1 behind Trout. I mean, he possibly has a shot, if he really turns it on, to win the Triple Crown. It's tough. It's going to be tough because he's 4 homers behind, you know, Nelson Cruz, but he's only 1 ribby off the lead, and he's 4th in batting. Now, the problem with the batting average is Altuve's batting 340. The guy's got 197 hits. So he's got – that's the toughest one. He's got 19 points to be made up. But if he could have won the Triple Crown, he would have definitely got it because nobody's ever done that as a rookie, ever. I looked it up. Nobody. So take that for what it's worth. I think because he's on a bad team, the White Sox, I think you might be right in Trout winning it, but –
he also has 97 runs. He's still got 3 weeks left.
He's got 97 runs.
Say Trout hits 38 homers
and
drives in 120. All right, so say he drives 115.
Say whatever you want. This guy's closer to winning the Triple Crown this year than Trout is. That's all I'm saying. He's a solid first baseman when he's in. He's more than adequate, but Trout is a monster in the outfield patrolling. He's a gold glove outfielder, bottom line. Do you want to consider Felix Hernandez for the MVP?
I did till he had that little...
Yeah, but then he beat Lester last week.
Four or five games.
He's 14-5, right?
They're not going to give it to
him. So he's one lead off. 15 wins is the most in the league right now.
They're not going to give it to two pitchers back.
He's pitching tomorrow night. I'll be there when he pitches. He's 14-5, right? 206 innings pitched, 209 strikeouts, a 2.180 ERA, and 199 batting average against, a whip of .90. Now, for argument's sake, what if Hernandez has a big four or five starts down the stretch and pulls his ERA close to or below two. I mean, it would take a lot.
He's winning the Cy Young.
But, well, I think he's up for the Cy Young right now as we speak.
All right. I agree with you.
Right?
Because who else is up there with him?
Well, he's one off.
And he's put his team.
He's second in ERA behind Sale, right? He's right there. For Cy Young, let's say right now, second in ERA. He's second in wins with 14 behind a bunch of guys that got 15. And in strikeouts, a couple of guys have more, right? Corey Kluber's probably got more strikeouts. And what about Scherzer? Does he have more too? David Price has 243. Scherzer has 226.
Kluber has
223.
He would have to have 20 wins and 19 wins.
Look at the team he's on, though. Felix Hernandez. They get to the playoffs with him and Cano. You got to give Felix the Cy Young, more than likely. But
you
need more evaluation after these.
I'm not giving him the MVP. I'm going to give him the Cy Young.
So who you want to get? Would you consider Abreu for the MVP, even though he's on a garbage team? Because he's he's 27 years old or something like that. He's from Cuba, but I mean, he's done more in his rookie year.
I would say.
I know Yasiel Puig out in L.A. when he first came up. You know, a lot of dancing and loving, and he was dynamic and dangerous. But Jose Abreu, I know Chicago ain't L.A., but still, the guy monster season for his first appearance in the U.S.
Now they won't give him the rookie of the year because he's older, right?
They put a rule in after
he's 27.
After Ichiro won it, right? When his first year, 2001 or whatever.
He's 27, but I will say I still think Trout's winning the MVP.
All right, you may be right. I'm not. Let me get you. You watched the Jet game, right? You didn't get to see Derek Jeter today. How'd you feel about Derek Jeter?
No, I didn't see Derek Jeter.
They got shut out 2-0.
I didn't see that. What did they say?
You didn't see it?
What are they doing?
Michael Jordan saw it.
They're selling a jersey.
Cal Ripken Jr., who didn't make the top 10 in the last 40 years, he saw it. But you didn't see it, and neither did I. Why?
Because I'm watching the
same reason we're wearing green right now. That's right.
And we're talking to Kenny O'Brien today.
I paid tribute to Derek Jeter enough. That's right.
That's right.
Derek Jeter, for me, I have tremendous respect the way he conducted himself, you know, especially in this day and age where everyone's looking for the next big story, trying to catch an athlete doing something wrong. He's the last Boy Scout in baseball.
And he is the last
great
Boy
career,
Scout in baseball.
You know?
He's a great face
on
for
and
baseball.
Off the field. But I was a diehard fan when I was young of the Yankees, and so players like Thurman Munson and Ron Guidry meant more to me. You know? So I'm not missing a Jet game for Derek Jeter today. There's tons of coverage. I'll watch the coverage tomorrow on SportsCenter.
Right,
I'll have that long flight out to Seattle. I'll see plenty of it on the DirecTV that JetBlue has. That's fine. But I forgot that it was Derek Jeter Day until I just clicked on the baseball part of this Yahoo Sports.
Well, I knew about it. I heard about it this morning.
I forgot about it because I was more focused on my team, the Jets, and you weren't, obviously.
I was focused on the Jets.
You got to focus, sweetie.
I looked at the back of the news.
You're not even a Yankee fan. You're a Met fan.
I didn't even turn it on.
I was focused on Dan Murphy, batting 300. Give me a break.
He's done for the year.
I know.
They won today. They won again.
The Tribe won. My team won. Tribe.
You're the Tribe. Now you're a Tribe fan.
You
bounce around like a Spalding ball.
Like a Super Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Now what are you doing? How long are you going out? You're going out to Seattle. You're going to cover the game.
It's going to be great.
King Felix is pitching tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night.
That's great. Are you going out down there and you're going to interview him, write a story about it?
No. Not tomorrow night.
He'll probably talk to you tomorrow, right? Maybe after?
He'll be crowded around by the usual suspects in terms of the media. I wouldn't do that. Tomorrow night, I'm just going to go to the game, watch it, and enjoy it.
Have you been there before?
I'm more there to see James Jones and do a story on him, hopefully. Right. And if I can, I want to interview, because Cano's another guy, probably tough to get near, unless you're usual media guys, right? But I want to interview guys around him. I'd like to interview, like, Dave Sims when I'm out there, get his thoughts on calling games with him, maybe interview a trainer or something like that, if I can interview a coach, you know, guys that really don't have anybody bothering them.
I'm curious to see.
We'll see how
the media is out there compared to what would be over here. I'm assuming New York's the prime market.
Yeah, New York, everything's always bigger and costs more here. Yeah, you know.
If you do get to talk to Cano, Matt, just ask him how he likes it out there compared to New York and being what he was.
But I just can imagine there'd be a lot of people crowding around him, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm more concerned with covering the homegrown product, James Jones, who's from Brooklyn, went to Long Island University, and now he's made it to the major leagues. It's a nice story. We're a local station on Long Island, so it's a nice story to do.
Exactly.
Right? So now, baseball going down the stretch. What players have you been most impressed with this year?
Kershaw, we said. Trout, we said. 5 minutes.
What are you thinking?
Mickey.
You thinking all these teams are locked in? You think Baltimore's a lock for the playoffs, right?
Baltimore's locked.
So Baltimore and L.A. are a lock.
Kansas City.
What do you think happens with Kansas City, Detroit, and Cleveland?
That's going to be interesting.
Cleveland. I know, interesting. I'm asking you what you think. I don't want to hear you called it next time we do a show again in September.
I'm going to say this. I still think Detroit is winning that division. Okay? I'm still thinking. With that pitching staff and those bats, you got whenever you have Cabrera is probably the...
Victor Martinez had a very good year for the ball.
Martinez is still hitting the ball great. Yeah. He's great. They got a great team.
Yeah, decent line. Hunter. Avila can do the job. Torrey Hunter, yeah.
Kinsler, they got a great team.
Yeah.
Davis out there now steal some bags. They got
rid of... They sit 2.5 back.
I still think they're going to win.
I noticed about teams like Detroit, 35-32 at home. The Yankees, 36-34 at home. Even Seattle, that's their downfall. They're in a wild card spot, but at home, 36-36. That's going to burn those teams if they don't make the playoffs. That's what's going to cause it. Poor performance at home. Whereas you got Baltimore, 43-28 at home, right? Kansas City, it's all right, 38-32. But Cleveland, if they do make it, it'll be because they're dominant at home, 43-28 at home. Angels, 47-24 at home. That's what you need to do. You got to win your home games.
If you look at this American League,
right?
Two teams in this American League disappointed me this year that I thought they were going to do better.
Right.
The Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I thought they were going to be better too.
At 63-80.
But they won last year, so how much can it really burn them?
Well, they won last
year. But I picked them to be a playoff team, I think. Yeah. I think I picked them to win the division. I mean, I picked them to be a wild card behind Baltimore.
Yeah, because now, okay.
I picked them to make the playoffs, and they ain't making it.
And also, the Texas.
Yeah, Texas was another team. And their coach, just bowed out, right? Ron Washington?
Yeah.
He's got some personal issues going on, but I think he's got the most wins in franchise history. He took him to two World Series, right?
Texas became...
And I thought Texas was going to be a playoff team along with the Angels.
The worst team in baseball.
And they're out.
Worst team in baseball, the Texans.
I'm pretty sure Angels, before the season, I had Baltimore and Boston. I had Detroit winning their division, and I had L.A. and Texas.
How does that happen?
And Texas is lousy.
Yeah.
That was 3 out of 5. In the National League, I had the Nationals winning the division, so I looked brilliant on that one. Right? I had the Braves as a wild card. I had St. Louis winning that division. Cincinnati let me down. I had them as a wild card, though. They let me down. They had a lot of injuries. Votto was out. They had some damage there.
Do you know Chapman, their closer?
And then I had the Dodgers, obviously.
Well, the Dodgers, I think the Dodgers.
And I had San Fran fighting for a play, but I think I had Cincinnati being a wild card. I'd have to go back and look at it. But yeah, Cincinnati I thought was a big disappointment in the National League for me. And I would say the two you named, Boston and Texas. Yeah, I think those are the three biggest disappointments in baseball.
Well, I know you have Boston won last year, but how do you go from winning a World Series to one of the worst teams in the American League? Yeah,
I guess that better that you win and then become the worst, right?
Yeah, but would you rather go to lose?
Would you rather go to four straight World Series and never win and be good, or would you rather win? I'm asking you a question.
Yeah.
Or would you rather win and then be the worst team the next year?
I'd rather win and be the worst team.
All right.
But what did
Your Honor, what caused I rest my case.
What caused them to be the worst team? They're the same team they were last year. Who'd they get rid of? They got rid of
Their
Ellsbury?
Their lineup did not perform the way they're supposed to.
They got rid of Ellsbury?
Even Pedroia didn't have a good
Ortiz, they're still there. Those guys are still there.
Maybe letting Ellsbury go and a few other things really had
Ellsbury
a massive effect.
Really did it? Come on. Really? The pitcher staff's still there. Except for Lester.
Yeah. What are you, a closet Boston fan? Because
no.
You're a Met fan. I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
Boston's name isn't in this new song. And I love this song now. I want more wins so I can play this song more often.
Thank you, Kenny O'Brien. Thank you, Derek Wozniak.
Great guest.
Good show.
So the Jets are 1-0, and we're playing the Green Bay Packers next.
Don't be surprised.
And folks, the Jets are 8-3 against the Packers. They haven't lost to them in Green Bay since the 90s.
The Jets could run on them.
We'll be back on the 28th, I believe. Before then, the Jets will play at Green Bay and then home against Chicago and Detroit. So for the next 3 weeks, enjoy the invasion of the NFC North, because the Jets are coming. And the theme song by Wings is leading the way with Paul McCartney and Geno Smith. And the Jets defense are taking us somewhere. And we're on call over the next 8 to 10 weeks. And we'll see where they're at that point. But for now, Sweeney's out of here. The Waz is out of here. Folks, have a good week. Enjoy the win. Let's go get another one next week.
We're going to have three wins by the time we get back.
All right, folks, have a good night. We'll talk to you.
The views expressed in the previous program.
did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.